photographer's smile. Take a break for a while. Take a rest. Do your very best. Pay $500.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush's 2004 campaign has rolled out the first political ads of the season in a multi-million dollar ad buy, trumpeting Bush's steady leadership in times of change. But the first reviews are in, and the ads are getting less than rave reviews. John Curry's campaign openly ridiculed the spots, saying the only thing steady about this president is he's steadily leading our country in the wrong direction. The general president of the International Association of Firefighters, Harold Scheidberger, lambasted the ads, saying for 2.5 years Bush has shortchanged firefighters and the safety of our homeland by not providing firefighters the resources needed to do the job. And 9/11 widow Monica Gabrielle says it's unspeakable and outrageous that George W. Bush would choose to use Ground Zero in his reelection campaign while his administration continues to resist testifying before the independent commission investigating the attacks. Hours after staking claim to the Democratic nomination for president on Super Tuesday, John Kerry began laying the groundwork for selecting a running mate for the struggle to unseat George W. Bush. Kerry told reporters during a campaign trip to Florida that he expects to announce soon the process by which he will choose the number two person for the Democratic ticket. His campaign said details might be released as early as Wednesday. Senior advisors said it was possible, but not likely, that Kerry would choose a nominee well before the Democratic nominating convention in his hometown of Boston in July. Foreign terrorism suspects held in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, do not have the right to a lawyer when appearing before a panel that will annually consider their possible release, the Pentagon said on Wednesday. Draft rules were unveiled Wednesday for review panels that will serve as parole boards for prisoners. Prisoners will have the right to state their case during a hearing, but no right to counsel. More news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C. Call toll-free 1-866-539-2509 or visit www.legion.org today. The number again, 1-866-539-2509. We'll tell your story where it matters.
According to the National Golf Foundation, the odds of an amateur golfer hitting a hole-in-one are 12,600 to 1. The odds of what 68-year-old Bill Hilsheimer accomplished could short-circuit a calculator. His most recent hole-in-one was last week at the 157-yard 13th hole at a golf course in Venice, Florida. In January, he aced a 157-yard hole at a course in Sarasota, and in September, he had another ace at a 105-yard hole on a course in Ohio. Not bad for a player who lost most of his right hand 59 years ago when he was run over by a train in Columbus, Ohio. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Tricky Dick had nothing on Tricky George. Nixon mostly played his tricks in politics, but Bush is even more dangerous, for he routinely plays his tricks in government. Most famous, of course, is his always-shifting find-the-weapons-of-mass-destruction game, which already has killed more than 500 Americans, wounded 3,000 more, and caused untold numbers of casualties among innocent Iraqis. But he's quite a trickster here at home, too, ranging from his forest of environmental deceptions to his ludicrous claims that job growth will mushroom if only the CEOs and millionaire investors can get more tax breaks. Then there's his budgetary hocus-pocus, where he pretends to pull an elephant out of a hat. Even though he lards his latest budget with more than $500 billion for the military, billions more in special tax giveaways to his wealthy supporters, and a multi-billion dollar annual prescription drug boondoggle for the drug giants, he claims that his magic budget will cut the ballooning federal deficit in half. It won't, of course, as practically all independent economists agree, but what it does is to give Bush cover for slashing spending on programs that benefit us middle and low-income people. Having frittered away the bulk of the public treasury, Bush suddenly has turned tight-fisted, saying, "We're calling upon Congress to be wise with the taxpayers' money." Among his cuts, school dropout prevention, work training grants, nurse training, rural firefighters, medical research for veterans, lead prevention in children, prison rape prevention, modernizing air controller systems, EPA's Clean Water Fund, modernizing the IRS to pursue corporate tax cheats, small business microloans, CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, state and local law enforcement assistance, college tuition grants, violent crime programs, and after-school care for children. This is Jim Hightower saying, Bush's budget is class warfare, enriching the super rich at the expense of the rest of us.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
That's be definitely hot.
I don't see it that way.
I forgot. You're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute. That's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool,
hot
it really is, visit Xerox.com/office.
What do you know? Someone's at the door. Hello? Oh, no, a runaway lawnmower. It's going for the shag carpeting.
A runaway lawnmower. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a tougher, more impact-resistant floor with Plitanium plywood from Georgia-Pacific. Plitanium is better at withstanding the occasional dropped bowling ball or frozen turkey than building materials made of wood strands glued together. Plitanium plywood.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. This is Tom Hartman broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations.
Streaming down from the depths of outer space.
On the Sirius satellite radio system. And streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, our internet, listener-supported internet radio station. Lots of news today. It's the recovery for the rich is full tilt boogie, full steam, full bore, underway, according to the Bushites. And you know what's fascinating to me is that nobody has made the distinction yet between a recovery of an economy and a recovery for the rich. The last time a national politician really talked about this and just laid out what was going on was FDR back in the 1930s. I want to get to that. But first, I just wanted to share with you a report from Andy Borowitz. These are great. Andy Borowitz, in a nationally televised address last night on the subject of gay matrimony and space exploration, President Bush revealed that gay marriage wiped out all life on Mars millions of years ago. Bush said, "The Mars rover tells us that Mars at one time was host to a great civilization, perhaps even more advanced than our own. But that civilization and all living things on it were ultimately destroyed by gay marriage." End of quote. While the Mars rover has found evidence of water necessary for sustaining life, it has found no evidence of life itself. Quoting Mr. Bush, leading one to the unavoidable conclusion that gay marriage must have destroyed it. The Martians, for all their advances, obviously neglected to pass a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage, Mr. Bush said. We follow their example at our peril. In the Democratic response to the president's speech, Senator Evan Bayh, Democrat of Indiana, denied that there was any evidence that the so-called red planet had, in the words of Mr. Bush, gone pink. Senator Bayh went on to say that while the Mars rover had in fact discovered traces of water, the rover offered, quote, no evidence whatsoever, end quote, of gay Martians. Later, Mr. Bush backed off his claims somewhat, saying that if gay marriage did not destroy life on Mars, then Saddam Hussein did. Thanks. This is from the Borowitz Report. Andy Borowitz, borowitzreport.com. Okay, moving along here. As President Bush, a public citizen. See, this is what Ralph Nader does well. And why Ralph Nader should still be around. Public Citizen, of course, is one of the organizations that he founded. And as Public Citizen points out, they just laid out this new report and a news release on it. President Bush prepares to launch a multi-million-dollar campaign blitz. It's going to happen. It's going to start today. They released a report outlining who helped pay for the campaign and what favors they received. This is fascinating. This report. Yeah, the title of it is Bush Campaign Ads Brought to You by Special Interests. Campaign Citizen, or Public Citizen, excuse me, details how much money representatives from key industries, including finance, real estate, communications, energy, health care, and insurance, have helped raise, and lists the tax breaks, regulatory changes, legislative favors, and plum appointments that Bush has given to his backers. I mean, you could just put a for sale sign in front of this White House. This is it hasn't been like this since the 1870s. I mean, the last president who was so openly corrupt in his being in bed with the big corporations was Ulysses S. Grant, and he was so corrupt that his own Republican Party wouldn't nominate him for the third term in office that he wanted. Because of the railroad bribery scandals, back then they used to refer to this kind of behavior as bribery. Now it's called bundling. Public Citizen's report finds that the 416 Bush Rangers and Pioneers. Now these are 416 individuals. Think of all the millions of people in America, and all the interests that we all represent. 416 Bush Rangers and Pioneers have bundled together at least $58.1 million. For the 2004 campaign, and that 90% of them represent the special interests of America's corporations. Public Citizen's report details how Bush has given tax breaks that benefit the finance industry, made it easier for real estate developers to build on wetlands and in the Florida Everglades, reneged on a campaign pledge to regulate carbon dioxide emissions, pleasing the electric, utility, and mining industries, increased the amount of public land available for oil and gas exploration and coal mining, filled top Interior Department positions with executives in the mining industry, and aided the pharmaceutical industry by pushing pro-industry Medicare drug legislation, as you all know. Joan Claybrook, the president of Public Citizen, said, "When people watch TV this week and see the ads touting President Bush and his record, they should know that major corporations help pay for those ads. More important, they should know that these industries get their money's worth from Bush administration decisions worth billions of dollars." For example, in the finance industry, bankers, stockbrokers, venture capitalists, wealthy private investors have contributed at least $38.4 million to Bush's campaign efforts in 2000 and 2004, produced more Rangers and Pioneers than any other industry. 73 people in this industry have bundled at least $10.8 million so far in this election cycle for George Bush. Of course, you know, he cut, this was their number one priority, was cutting the dividends tax. So now, if as a result of, I mean, these guys are really getting their money's worth. I mean, they put in a few million, and they get back hundreds of millions, billions. I mean, the number of billionaires in the United States went from just over 100 last year to just over 500 this year. Surprised? So now, if you earn your living sitting at the pool waiting for the dividend check to come on your investments, you only pay 15% income tax on that revenue. But if you earn your living working for a living, or owning a small business, or a medium-sized business, where you actually have to take, see, as a small, you actually have to take your cash out as income. I mean, I run a small business here, and this radio show is one, and I've run many others over the years. And I remember talking to my CPA once some years ago, said, you know, why can't I pay myself dividends? And he said, because you're a small business, the IRS will come in and say, that's not really dividend income, that's really income. And you have to pay payroll tax on it, on the first 80-some-odd thousand, 87.9 or 89.7, whatever it is. And you've got to pay, you know, you've got to pay a tax rate. You can't treat it as dividend income. But if I was wealthy enough to just, you know, put all my money in Exxon stock and sit around the pool and wait for the checks to come every month, the dividend checks, I would not pay any payroll tax, and I would only pay a maximum of 15% in income tax. And you wonder why these guys are bundling money for the Bush administration.
His other major tax cuts have benefited the securities industry and its CEOs, who personally will save hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in taxes a year. Social Security privatization. This is the one that they're really salivating over, is privatizing Social Security. If they can get their hands on that Social Security trust fund, these guys are going to make so much money. I mean, it's peanuts what they're giving George Bush. Here's $10 million, George. Here's $100 million, George. These guys will make $1 billion in profit a year. Tens of billions. I mean, you know, some of these corporations are making over $1 billion in profits a year. Real estate developers making out like millions. They've donated $32.2 million to the Bush campaign efforts. 37 real estate developers have qualified as rangers or pioneers. And therefore, the Bush administration has made it easier for developers to build on wetlands, attempted to narrow the Clean Water Act so it no longer covers many ponds, streams, and wetlands, and has appointed crusading opponents of the Endangered Species Act to key positions in the Interior Department. What a surprise. What a surprise. The electric utility industry has donated $6 million. It goes on and on. Oil and gas. Oil and gas companies gave $15.8 million to the Bush campaign efforts in 2004. Bush has opened federal land for oil and gas exploration and coal mining, targeted Wyoming's Powder River Basin for coal bed methane drilling, and required federal agencies to consider how agency rules will affect energy supply distribution and use. Mining companies. It just goes on and on and on. I'm gonna stop there. I've reached my own saturation point, my own threshold. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to weigh in on these and other issues, there are a bunch of stuff here I do want to get along to, but let's take a couple of quick calls here. Ron in Tucson is on the line. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. A couple of things that I'd like to talk to you about. Number one, I want a Democratic candidate, Mr. Curry, to turn to George Bush and say, we're not talking jobs that pay $5, $6, $7 an hour, and flipping burgers at McDonald's is not manufacturing. I want to hear him actually say those words. We want to talk about jobs that are paying money that people can live and afford to put back into society.
Yeah.
That's, you know, so when they talk about we created 100,000, 200,000 jobs, I want them to come back and say, yeah, how many of those jobs are paying a livable, sustainable wage?
Yeah, and most of them aren't. I mean, that's the whole conservative agenda, starting with Ronald Reagan, has been a war on organized labor and a war on the working middle class.
And I want them to come back with those words. I dare them to. John, if you're listening, I love you. I hope you win, but I dare you, and I challenge you to do that.
You know,
now,
I suspect Ronnie will.
One other thing I'd like to touch on real fast, if I can, Tom.
Sure.
The next time you're sitting in a doctor's office, any one of you who are out there listening, and the pharmacist, the sales company comes in from the pharmacy company and gives away pens and pads and keychains and dinners and lunches and bagels and candies.
And free trips to Hawaii.
To Hawaii. I want you to tell the doctor that I am not taking a prescription from that man's company.
Yeah.
Because that's why your drug costs are so damn high.
Well, that's part of it. I mean, you know, the detail guys and the freebies that they're giving docs are a small part of it. But advertising is a huge expense in the pharmaceutical industry. But they also pay multi-million-dollar salaries to their executives. They have private corporate jets. They have headquarters that are among the most luxurious of all industries in America. And they pay huge dividends to their stockholders. They're very profitable. And
I get mad at people who don't speak up and go into retail stores and say, I'm not buying here if it's not made in America. I'm not buying these jeans that Levi's took and went to another country to manufacture.
Yeah, we really do need, Ron, a consumer revolution in America. It's time for Americans to wake up. Thanks for the call and thanks for the comments.
Tom,
I appreciate
it.
1-866-889-8894, and Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program.
Oh, thank you, Tom. It was fascinating this morning to watch Karen Hughes, you know, Bush's flack mouthpiece, being questioned by Katie Couric on NBC about Bush's shiny new campaign ads that are going to be run today.
Right.
Because Karen Hughes looked like a deer in the headlights, because several families of the 9/11 victims have been voicing their disgust at George W. Using the 9/11, the terrorist attacks, and pictures of bodies.
Yeah, Monica Gabriel, whose husband died in the Twin Towers, says it's a slap in the face of the murders of 3,000 people.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Good point, Chris. Good point. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Uncommon Sense from the Radical Metal.
Natural gas wells are turning the high plains of Wyoming into an industrial zone, according to many who live there. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Demand for natural gas is rapidly rising, and the industry is looking for new sources of the fossil fuel. It's found one in western coal beds. Methane gas is trapped in deep layers of coal under parts of Wyoming and other states. Jill Morrison is with the Powder River Basin Resource Council, representing landowners in the northeastern corner of Wyoming. Morrison says gas wells are springing up all around.
We have now probably around 14 to 20,000 producing wells. There's another 30,000 projected over the next 10 years. And they're talking about up to 80 or 100,000 wells. It's having a dramatic and profound effect on people's lives and the landscape.
Morrison says the wells are connected by networks of gravel roads and pipelines, along with power lines to run pumps and compressors. The gas is often trapped beneath groundwater, which is pumped out of the wells.
You can't put this water on our soils and vegetation because it's high enough in sodium. And you mix it with the very clay soils we have, it destroys the soil and kills the vegetation.
Morrison says groundwater levels in the Powder River Basin are falling and many people's wells have gone dry, and compressors that move the gas through pipelines create a constant racket.
And they run 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And it sounds like a jet on a runway that never takes off.
Morrison's group is lobbying for changes in state and federal laws to protect landowners and the environment from the growing impacts of coal bed gas production. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Last year, when the United Auto Workers negotiated a new contract for its members at the Big Three car companies, they traded off gains for the right to organize at auto parts suppliers without interference. Time will tell, though, if the UAW's gamble to grow will pay off. What we do know is that General Motors plans to increase its imports of auto parts from China 20-fold by the end of this decade, and Ford doubled its parts imports last year alone.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
Sociologists often turn to infant mortality rates as an indicator of a country's well-being, and by this measure, we're slipping. For the first time in more than 40 years, the overall infant mortality rate increased from 6.8 deaths per 1,000 in 2001 to 7 such deaths in 2002. The Centers for Disease Control speculates women's decisions to have children later in life may account for the higher rate, though the CDC's report makes no mention of poverty, joblessness, or food insecurity.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
More united we stand, divided we fall.
And welcome back. You're listening to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman radio program. You know, here's my take on this. The Bush ads that are featuring 9/11, you've got a bunch of the families who are very upset about it. And on the other hand, you've got Republicans saying, well, hey, you know, he was president during 9/11. And it's true. He was. He really was. You know, FDR campaigned in his subsequent campaigns on how he handled the Great Depression. And, you know, probably would have with regard to World War II had it come around. The problem, the hypocrisy for me, is not George Bush saying, I was president during 9/11 and here's what I did. The problem, the hypocrisy for me, the thing that really, really fries me, I mean, it just boggles me, is that he is saying to the 9/11 commission, I mean, you remember after Pearl Harbor, Roosevelt had a commission going within a month. I mean, you know, find out what happened. And the 9/11 commission, Bush is saying to them that he will only speak to them for 1 hour. And only with the top two people on the commission, not the entire group, and not on the record and not in public. And the same thing for Cheney, and they don't want Condi Rice to speak to them at all. She's the one, you'll recall, that Sandy Berger told me and a bunch of other people, and I mean, he said it to others before. I was in this meeting, this little briefing for the press, that when he handed off, he was the equivalent of Condoleezza Rice in the Clinton administration, and when they left office, he handed Condoleezza Rice this package and said, here you go, Al-Qaeda is going to be your number one priority. And the administration looked at that and said, well, no, we really think tax cuts for the rich will be our number one priority. That's what we're going to do. So, whenever we talk about the families being outraged that Bush is using this, I think that it really has to be put in that context, and we have to remember that there's, you know, the exploitation is, it's more than just exploitation. There's something really, really wrong going on here. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. John in Riverside, California, listening on radiopower.org. Hey, John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you very much. Just touching base on what you were just saying with the ads and everything, I was listening on the news that I guess the firefighters and the police aren't too happy with Mr. Bush over Homeland Security because he's not funding them.
Right. Yeah.
But, here's something that Mr. Kerry needs to touch on that's really going to touch home with a lot of people, and that's the soaring gas prices. Here in California, for regular unleaded, you're anywhere between $2.11 and $2.20 a gallon.
Yeah.
And hey, wait a second, Mr. President. Why, if there's this glut of oil and all of this oil in Iraq, are our gas prices skyrocketing? I mean, it's getting to the point where you can't afford to drive to work anymore.
Yeah, which I think is a good thing. I mean, in Europe, they use about 1/7 as much energy, and I'm talking about the fully developed European country, you know, like France and Germany, 1/7 as much energy as we do per person, and yet they've got a very nice standard of living, but it costs $5 for a gallon of gas.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I have no problem with that. I think that's an entirely appropriate thing. I drive a car that gets 45, 50 miles to the gallon, a Prius, and it works just fine. You know, it's we can do that in America, and then the air will get cleaner, the environment won't be endangered, and we won't be, you know, like a drunken sailor addicted to the oil that we're sucking out of the Middle East.
So. Oh, I agree with that completely as well. You know, which leads me to another thing. You know, with the way things are with the environment and everything, then why isn't Bush aggressively pursuing fuel cell development, et cetera, and so forth?
Yeah.
You know, more clean air alternatives.
Well, he's not, because he's taking money from the dirty industries.
Exactly.
Yeah. John, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. The music means we got to go here. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends, and stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. the glass ceiling persists throughout the world, but it's less prevalent in Russia than anywhere else. A 26-nation poll by business advisory firm Grant Thornton found that nearly 90% of Russian corporations include women in the ranks of senior management. The Philippines ranks second, followed by the U.S., while Japan, the Netherlands, and Pakistan were at the bottom of the list. But even for frontrunner Russia, women only made up 42% of senior management positions.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
He's the largest fish to be hooked in the ongoing criminal probes into U.S. corporate scandals. Former WorldCom CEO Bernie Ebbers surrendered to the FBI yesterday and was indicted on fraud and conspiracy charges for leading the company into a $180 billion collapse in 2002 due to $11 billion in accounting fraud. Ebbers pleaded not guilty and left court after putting up a $10 million bond. This week, former WorldCom Chief Financial Officer Scott Sullivan copped a plea deal with federal prosecutors in exchange for his testimony against Ebbers, who faces up to 25 years in prison if convicted on all charges.
Following remarks by the Bush administration that the offshoring of U.S. jobs is good policy, lawmakers are taking aim at the president's handling of the economy. A bill proposed yesterday by Vermont Representative Bernie Sanders would end tax credits to companies that move jobs overseas. Meanwhile, a showdown is looming in the Senate over Bush administration plans to rewrite the rules on who qualifies for overtime pay. The Economic Policy Institute says changes proposed by the Labor Department could amount to a pay cut for a net 8 million Americans.
Well, since the administration refuses to change course, it's time for Congress to step in and provide some adult supervision.
Senator Tom Harkin is a Democrat from Iowa. An earlier attempt by Harkin to halt changes to overtime rules narrowly missed its mark, but Harkin says he'll try again.
It amazes me. Wherever I travel, people come up to me to talk about the overtime issue. They feel ripped off, and they want these proposed rules stopped, and that's exactly what we're going to do.
In other news, an attempt by Democrats to extend emergency benefits to the unemployed failed by two votes. The measure was attached to a bill on gun liability, but was shot down by Senate Republicans.
The first of 30 lawsuits against a company that makes flavoring for microwave popcorn went to trial this week in a Joplin, Missouri courtroom. 32-year-old Eric Peoples worked for a subsidiary of International Flavors and Fragrances Incorporated, mixing up the butter flavor for microwave popcorn. 17 months later, he'd lost the use of most of his lungs and now needs a double transplant to survive. Peoples and his colleagues, who all suffer from what they now call popcorn packer's lung, blame a chemical in the flavoring for their disease. The company cites improper ventilation and claims their product is safe.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
Some corporate executive perks have legendary status, like former GE chairman Jack Welch's post-retirement Manhattan apartment and Knicks tickets, or former Tyco CEO Dennis Kozlowski's Mediterranean birthday party for his wife, all on the company tab. But most executive perks go unnoticed thanks to weak rules at the Securities and Exchange Commission, which allow companies to classify such spending as general unspecified business expenses, exempt from public disclosure.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back here in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman here, yes indeed. The Fed gives favorable report on the economy. Interesting, every now and then in the newspaper, and I don't know if the editor of our, it's a Knight Ritter paper, so I don't know, the Burlington Free Press, the one of the two papers that we get here in small town Vermont, and here high up in the People's Republic of Vermont. Anyhow, I don't know if the editor has a sense of irony or if it's just an accident, but every now and then you get these you'll get these two articles juxtaposed that just are kind of you know, amazing. And today in the Burlington Free Press, on page 7A, we have one article, Fed gives favorable report on economy. You know, about how great the economy is. The recovery for the rich is really humming along. In fact, here's the, this is an AP story. Factories hummed and consumers kept cash registers busy in the first 2 months of this year. Fresh evidence that the economic recovery is moving ahead, according to a Federal Reserve report on Wednesday. Economic activity continues to expand in January and February, said the Fed. However, unemployment has been growing slowly. Even with the pickup, then they add, even with the pickup in factory activity, manufacturers have lost 3 million jobs since July of 2000. That's the month factory employment peaked. Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton says, I don't think our country has an economic strategy. Yeah, now the other story, so here's this story saying, the economy is great. Why is the economy great? Well, the stock market is going up and spending is going on, and you're seeing... I mean, here's the story that was juxtaposed with it. Credit counseling industry needs help of its own. It's a column by Michelle Singletary called The Color of Money, and she talks about how, according to the Federal Reserve, last year America's consumer debt topped $2 trillion for the first time. The average household credit card debt is $9,200. The average, and among people who are seeking help from credit counseling agencies, the average client has more than $15,700 in unsecured consumer debt and $30,000 in gross income. In other words, by the time people get to these credit counseling agencies, generally their debt exceeds more than 50% of their gross income, not their net income, but their gross income. I mean, it's where is the recovery? Well, actually, the recovery... you know, George Bush and Dick Cheney, they say, hey, the economy is... George Bush 2 weeks ago, he said, it's looking pretty good in Michigan about the economy there. And Dick Cheney on TV this weekend said, well, it looks pretty good to me. In fact, here we see in the Miami Herald, 1 year ago, the luxury real estate market here was lagging. But this year, brokers waited with bated breath as two hedge fund managers duked it out in a bidding war over a $10 million cooperative overlooking Central Park. There's a New York byline on this story. While the restaurant business struggled last year, the new five new A-list restaurants are opening this month in the splashy new Time Warner complex on the west side. It was possible to sashay into a top-tier restaurant without reservation until a few months ago. Now, dinner at Alain Ducasse at the Essex House, a three-star Michelin French restaurant where entrees start at $160 and a bottle of wine can cost $6,000. $1,000 must be reserved 30 days in advance. If you want to ride to dinner in a luxury sedan, you have to make your plans even sooner. Extravagance is back in a big way. Yes, there is an economic recovery for the rich. It is happening, sure enough. But that, you know, that and $5 will get you, you know, $5 if you're a working stiff. I mean, it's wrong. It is not working. The conservative economics, the conservative economic theory that there is this mythical free market, even though the market is the creation of government, which provides the currency and the court system and all the superstructure and infrastructure upon which business exists, that somehow in that free market, if you allow corporate power on the one hand to be absolutely unconstrained, and you don't provide labor with protections, that somehow things are going to work out. It's a fantasy, and we have seen it over and over and over again in this country and others all around the world. All you have to do is open your eyes and look. The golden age of the American middle class ran from the 1940s the beginning of the end was when Ronald Reagan declared war on organized labor by busting the PATCO strike, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Association. And it's just this, you must, it's not about economics ultimately, it's about power. If wealth can aggregate, then labor should be able to aggregate. It's really that simple. This isn't socialism or communism or anything like that. I mean, literally, Thomas Jefferson talked about these issues. Anyhow, Jerry in North Carolina is on the line. He's got some thoughts on the 9/11 Commission. 1-866-889-8894 is our number. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good afternoon. It's good to talk with you.
Thank you.
The gentleman that called in a little while ago made me think that maybe you ought to have a show and let people call in and tell what they wanted to hear John Kerry say to George Bush.
I have a feeling I'd have to sit here with a censor button going red hot.
and you know what I'd like to hear him at least say in an ad or in a talk,
yeah,
or
and
say in a debate,
sure,
is to say, when I'm president, I'm going to reappoint a 9/11 commission, and it will have subpoena powers, and Condi Rice will be called in to testify.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I have a feeling, Jerry, that between now and November, there's going, you know, we don't need to do a special show on this because it's going to be a continuing thread through the program.
Right.
And you raise a really good issue, and I appreciate you calling and sharing that with us. And it's just spot on. And you know, there is a long list of things that we all have our wish list for John Kerry, and we'll see what happens. You know, he's not the perfect candidate, but he's not George Bush, and so that goes a long way for me, frankly. The Medicare prescription, if you want to get the flavor of what's really going on here, economically, just listen to the corporate powers talking to themselves. And again, I want to emphasize one more time, I am not anti-corporation. I own a corporation. I've started a bunch of corporations in my life. And I'm all in favor of entrepreneurialism, of business. What I'm not in favor of is corporations being able to have monopoly powers in markets or being able to influence government, because governance is something that's between us and our government. And corporations do business, and that's between us and our corporations, as it were. But the founders were so clear about this. The Boston Tea Party was a revolt against the East India Company more than it was a revolt against England. Go back and read your history books or read my book on equal protection. It's actually the chapter about the East India, the Boston Tea Party is free online. You don't even have to buy a book. So I won't make my 75 cents. You know, everybody thinks of others. Make a pile of money. Anyhow, you just go to TomHartman.com and click on the unequal protection link, and you'll see a link there that says excerpts from the book, and read the chapter about the Boston Tea Party. I've talked about it on the program here before, so I'm not going to get into it a whole lot right now. We will a little later on in the year, perhaps, revisit some of these issues. But anyhow, if you want to know what's really going on, you listen to these guys talking to each other. Hear this from the Wall Street Journal from a day or two ago. The article by Theo Francis, the headline, Medicare Drug Law Helps Business. Get this. This is just quoting from the Wall Street Journal. The Medicare prescription drug law passed last year is having a healthy effect on the outlook for corporate finances. Within the past few weeks, a handful of large corporations have reported that they expect to collectively save more than $2.5 billion over time, thanks to the new government subsidy for employers. Did you know about that? It's amazing how little it was discussed in the press that the Medicaid bill sets aside billions of dollars to give to big corporations. These include estimated savings of $572 million at Bell South Corporation, $415 million at AMR Corporation's American Airlines, $300 million to $400 million at Deere Corporation, $100 million at Alcoa Incorporated, $450 million at U.S. Steel Corporation, $500 million at Delphi Corporation. The Wall Street Journal reports the projected savings come from a tax-free subsidy built into the Medicare program. They go on to note this subsidy has become controversial because although it was intended to encourage employers to continue to provide retiree health coverage, it doesn't discourage them from cutting benefits and shifting more costs to retirees. Are you getting it? What's more, the language of the legislation indicates that employers can be reimbursed even for amounts retirees pay. Bell South said last week that it expected the Medicare bill to contribute 10 cents a share to net income this year. Isn't that sweet? If you own a share of Bell, if you own a million shares of Bell, if you own 10 million shares of Bell South stock, you will be getting $1 million this year, which you'll only have to pay a 15% tax on, because it'll be a dividend. And all of that money will have come from the Medicare bill, out of the taxpayer, out of the pockets of the rest of us. So sweet. 1-866-889-8894 is the telephone number here on the Tom Hartman Program, and Carrie in Illinois is on the line. Hey, Carrie, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. How are you listening to us?
I'm on Sirius Radio, Tom.
That's great, Carrie.
I'd just like to make a comment. $2 a gasoline is not a good thing. I understand your point, and we do need to get off of fossil fuel and elect a president who will help us do that. But people on fixed incomes and the working poor, an extra $25 a week or $20 a week, getting back and forth to work or back and forth to the doctor, is serious money to some of these people.
Well, Carrie, I understand what you're saying, but I think you're missing half the equation. I think that the working poor should be having a decent minimum wage. They should have we should have a living wage in this country that allows people to get to work. I mean,
well,
that's what you're putting out is
about today. I'm not talking about what John Kerry said in his speech the other day that he was going to bring the minimum wage up to a decent standard, but I'm talking about right now today.
Yeah. Yeah, well, okay. Your point is well taken, Carrie, and I don't disagree that the increase in gasoline expenses is essentially a regressive hit on the working poor. But it's part of a systemic and larger problem. And the straw man argument that the cons put out all the time is, we can't have gas prices go up because it's going to harm the working poor. But they're not willing to talk about minimum wages. They're not willing to talk about repealing Taft-Hartley and allowing people to organize. Your point is well taken, and I think that this is part of a larger issue that we really need to be dealing with. But Carrie, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, and Tina in St. Petersburg is on the line. Hey, Tina.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Well, I'm okay, but I'm very concerned about what happens if George Bush actually does, get back in office. It's going to be hideous. But what I'm really wondering, what a lot of the people that I talk to who are Republicans about the deficit, and they go, oh, well. And it's just like, well, he's just printing more, and what will the value of our dollar actually be in another year or two? I mean, well, the prices will have to go up. Because the value is nothing.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yes, it is, and it's already happening. And this is how they're trying to gerrymander our trade policy. They're actually thinking that this is kind of a good thing, that because we're doing all this deficit spending and outrageous, borrowing billions of trillions of dollars from our children and our grandchildren to give as tax breaks to wealthy people right now, because of that enormous debt that we're building up, the rest of the world is saying, well, wait a minute, the United States isn't as good an investment as it used to be. The dollar isn't as strong as it used to be because these guys, they're spending themselves broke, and so the value of the dollar has dropped, about 30% now in the last couple of years, relative to most other foreign currencies. And the consequence of that is that imports into the United States are more expensive, exports out of the United States are cheaper, and so there is some small benefit to American companies who are exporting because they can sell more cheaply overseas. And there is some reduction in imports because the prices have gone up somewhat. But we have lost so much of our industry. This is not the way that you run a trade policy. You run a trade policy by looking at individual items. We have had tariffs in the United States ever since the 1780s, 1784, when Tench Cox got the first tariff passed in the United States. We need to go back to rational trade policies, and we need to solidify our dollar, and we need to go back to rational economic policies. I mean, it's just very straightforward. The debt, as you say, Tina, is going to be it's a bomb waiting to explode.
Well, I don't know why these people just think that it's a magical thing, and so what?
Yeah, well, because they're putting all this money in their pockets.
Oh.
I mean, that's the bottom line. It's the people that you're hearing from. You know, most of your commentators on TV are multimillionaires. Most of the politicians that you're hearing this from are people who are doing very well. Thank you very much. It's consider the source. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment with more Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Had to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida Sierra Club.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. I know we have a lot of trucker listeners who are listening on Sirius Satellite, and probably a lot of people's ears went up when I said, gas prices going up isn't a bad thing. But it really does have to be part of a coherent strategy. In Europe, there are people who drive trucks who make a very good living, and fuel prices are two or three times what they are here. It's all part. We have to have an administration that goes in and says, there is a responsibility. Government does have a responsibility for, making an economy work, for fine-tuning it, for adjusting and calibrating things. There really is a role for government to play there. And in fact, the entire creation of a working class, of a middle class, where people can actually put their kids through school and have a decent life, is an artifact of government. In the next hour, I've got a little clip of Teddy Roosevelt that I want to play for you about the living wage. He was the guy who first invented the phrase, or first popularized the phrase, back in 1912, living wage. And it has to be a whole cloth. You have to say, okay, here's a rational energy policy, here's a rational labor policy, here's a rational economic policy. This administration has had none of the above. Their policy has been, who will give us the largest campaign donations? We'll do what they want. And then someone else comes along and says, well, we want this. Okay, well, we'll give you a Medicare bill, and we'll slip a few billion dollars as a subsidy in there for you guys. And we'll give you an energy bill, and we'll put a subsidy in there for you. And on it goes. And you end up with a mess. And welcome to the American economy right now. And there's, a few holes here and there that have made it great for, the recovery for the rich, but not for the rest of America. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception.
But it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A recent report prepared by the Democratic staff of the U.S. House Education and Workforce Committee hangs the most solid number yet on the hidden costs of shopping at Walmart. The committee figures each Walmart store with a staff of 200 or more puts a $420,750 burden on local federal taxpayers for social services costs. These would include housing, education, energy, and tax benefits awarded to workers like those at Walmart who are not paid a living wage and for the most part do not have health insurance. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Some corporate executive perks have legendary status, like former GE chairman Jack Welch's post-retirement Manhattan apartment and Knicks tickets, or former Tyco CEO Dennis Kozlowski's Mediterranean birthday party for his wife, all on the company tab. But most executive perks go unnoticed thanks to weak rules at the Securities and Exchange Commission, which allow companies to classify such spending as general unspecified business expenses, exempt from public.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush's 2004 campaign has rolled out the first political ads of the season in a multi-million dollar ad buy, trumpeting Bush's steady leadership in times of change. But the first reviews are in, and the ads are getting less than rave reviews. John Curry's campaign openly ridiculed the spots, saying the only thing steady about this president is he's steadily leading our country in the wrong direction. The general president of the International Association of Firefighters, Harold Scheidberger, lambasted the ad, saying for 2.5 years Bush has shortchanged firefighters and the safety of our homeland by not providing firefighters the resources needed to do the job. And 9/11 widow Monica Gabrielle says it's unspeakable and outrageous that George W. Bush would choose to use Ground Zero in his reelection campaign while his administration continues to resist testifying before the independent commission investigating the attacks. Hours after staking claim to the Democratic nomination for president on Super Tuesday, John Kerry began laying the groundwork for selecting a running mate for the struggle to unseat George W. Bush. Kerry told reporters during a campaign trip to Florida that he expects to announce soon the process by which he will choose the number two person for the Democratic ticket. His campaign said details might be released as early as Wednesday. Senior advisors said it was possible, but not likely, that Kerry would choose a nominee well before the Democratic nominating convention in his hometown of Boston in July. Foreign terrorism suspects held in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, do not have the right to a lawyer when appearing before a panel that will annually consider their possible release, the Pentagon said on Wednesday. Draft rules were unveiled Wednesday for review panels that will serve as parole boards for prisoners. Prisoners will have the right to state their case during a hearing, but no right to counsel. More news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C. Call toll-free 1-866-539-2509 or visit www.legion.org today. The number again, 1-866-539-2509. We'll tell your story where it matters.
According to the National Golf Foundation, the odds of an amateur golfer hitting a hole-in-one are 12,600 to 1. The odds of what 68-year-old Bill Hilsheimer accomplished could short-circuit a calculator. His most recent hole-in-one was last week at the 157-yard 13th hole at a golf course in Venice, Florida. In January, he aced a 157-yard hole at a course in Sarasota, and in September, he had another ace at a 105-yard hole on a course in Ohio. Not bad for a player who lost most of his right hand 59 years ago when he was run over by a train in Columbus, Ohio. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
I wonder, is there anything that White House political operative Karl Rove won't try to turn into a political ad? I'm not even counting the big P.T. Barnum stunts like posing George in a Top Gun costume on that aircraft carrier last year or secretly flying Bush all the way to Iraq last Thanksgiving so he could be photographed holding a turkey. For these guys, everything is a prop, paid for by us taxpayers. Take the federal budget, which usually is crammed with statistics and charts detailing the seriousness of the government's business. But this year, for the first time ever, the document includes 27 glossy photos of our boy George in various heroic poses. Here he is in front of a giant American flag. Here he is talking with an old woman in a wheelchair. Here he is helping a child learn to read. One expects to find a centerfold pop-up of Bush hugging a puppy. Speaking of popping up, his Georgeness popped up at the famous Daytona 500 NASCAR race, posturing before 180,000 race fans and a huge TV audience. If he wants to make a campaign appearance there, fine. But Rove put him in Air Force One, costing us taxpayers about $57,000 an hour for the flight, and they used the plane itself as a prop, dramatically swooping over the racetrack as he departed. A priceless publicity shot dutifully covered by NBC, which broke away from coverage of the race itself to show the Prez soaring up and away. Bush even uses taxpayer funds for literally making TV ads. His new Medicare prescription drug law, which actually will deliver more to the profiteering drug companies than to senior citizens, has been turned into a glowing 30-second TV ad by the White House. It cost us taxpayers $9.5 million to air it. This is Jim Hightower saying, for the Bushites, all the world is a stage, and we're merely the people who have to pay for their show.
Randy, tell these Vermont campers a scary story.
They called it heartburn, the frequent kind, the kind only a monster could scare away. Well, a monster, or a new pill called Prilosec OTC. One pill a day for 24 hours of zero heartburn. It's possible with Prilosec OTC, and it starts working the very first day. But without this little pill, things could get creepy.
Randy, hold me!
Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling?
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. It's your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live around the planet on radiopower.org, streaming across the United States on Sirius satellite radio and on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast. It's Thursday. It's the second hour of our program. It's the hour and the show part in which we dig a little deeper. We look a little farther. We get into things that maybe you didn't know that you didn't know. Maybe you didn't know you didn't know that you didn't know, or you didn't even know that you needed to know, but you do need to know. And maybe what you did know wasn't right. And so it's our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could be. What do you know about Haiti? This is an extraordinary situation there. Greg Gumma is our guest. He's been the editor of Toward Freedom, a progressive world affairs periodical, which is at towardfreedom.com for the past 10 years. He's also the author of books such as Uneasy Empire, Repression, Globalization, and What We Can Do, and The People's Republic, Vermont, and the Sanders Revolution. In addition, he's authored scripts for documentary films, including Haitian Pilgrimage, on that country's religion and politics, and the play Inquisitions and Other Un-American Activities. He's lived in Vermont since 1968. A fellow member of the People's Republic here. Hey, Greg, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom.
I asked Louise to get you on here because I got this this piece in the mail or in email or where, however I found it. Somebody forwarded to me an article that you had written.
Yes.
About what was going on in Haiti, and I thought this is just so spot on. This guy really knows what he's talking about. He's done his homework. Tell us. Let's go back to the beginning. The first time the United States intervened in Haiti.
Right, 1915. Very much forgotten at this point. There's a sort of a famous forgotten American hero who was involved in that invasion, Smedley Butler, who was a U.S. Marine who had been involved in a number of U.S. interventions going on at that time. And as I write in the article, there were a number of reasons, some stated, some not. The stated reasons was, you know, it's unstable, there's a state of anarchy. The unstated reason was we were getting very close to World War One, and the U.S. was very worried about Germany getting a foothold in this hemisphere and was taking preemptive action, as well as protecting a lot of U.S. investments down there. And so we occupied the country for 19 years at that time. As I don't know if you're aware of this, but Haiti was the first independent black republic. It defeated Napoleon in 1804. So this year, this January, in fact, was the 200th anniversary of the Haitian Revolution, making it the first independent black republic. And here, 200 years later, we're in another occupation mode, although this one's more low-key. So they went in and they rewrote the Constitution.
They being we.
I hate to call it we, but I guess it is. At one point in that episode, when there was still a lot of domestic resistance to this imposed constitution, Butler was forced, for example, to go in and close down the National Assembly of Haiti at gunpoint because they were not going to accept this UN draft that was being imposed on them.
Greg, was Butler the guy who when Roosevelt was president, did the big expose on the attempt to by the Wall Street bankers to actually have Roosevelt assassinated? And
Not only that. Butler was a hero, a genuine American hero, but he subsequently really questioned a lot of what he had been doing and began giving speeches in the early 1930s, first against Mussolini, which almost got him court-martialed, and then basically critiquing his own work, saying, "I was a racketeer for capitalism." That's a very kind of a famous quote that you sometimes
hear. I actually have his book here. It's back in print.
Yeah, there's a couple of books, Old Gimlet Eye and Plot Against the White to Seize the White House by Jules Archer, and that book really documents. He was approached, I think, in 1932, I believe, by some shady business people, basically to help to overthrow the Roosevelt administration. And they thought that since he was such a big hero, he could be like their interim unity president. So, but instead of going along with the plan, he exposed it. Testified in Congress that there had been this plot by, you know, Wall Street types to get rid of Roosevelt.
Okay, so part of Smedley Butler, General Smedley Butler, who was the guy who led the 1915 intervention in Haiti, part of his distaste with this whole thing that blew up in the 1930s started back in 1915 when he went into Haiti.
That's right. Well, he thought he was doing a good thing, of course, like a lot of soldiers do when they go in. He thought he was really cleaning up a messy situation, and then he realized that he was really being used as a tool, that they really weren't concerned about, you know, the welfare of the Haitian people, but basically of protecting U.S. investments. And that was really one of the big disillusioning things in his life. It took him many years to sort of resolve it and to decide to go public, but it was the last intervention that he was involved in. He came back to the U.S. and he was one of the first commandants of the Marine Lejeune Marine Training Center, and actually in the 20s he led the sort of march of the veterans, the World War veterans on Washington, where they camped out in Washington.
Yeah.
They used to call it the bonus, march.
The bonus army.
They were run down by troops that were actually led by MacArthur.
That's right.
And a lower level officer. So he went through quite a transition, and that was the first intervention in Haiti. And then
now, Greg, let me just slow you down a little here. You suggest that at that point in time, 1915, when we first went into Haiti, that Haiti was an endangered investment property. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean was that the banks and a series of investors I mentioned, the First National Bank, they had control of the economy, but there had been a lot of instability. There had been a number of presidents. The presidents couldn't hold power. There was a domestic insurgency. I mentioned in the article the CACOs. In fact, just this week, there are Haitians who now, unfortunately, describe CACOs as looters. It's a slang expression in Haiti today for looters. But what it was, in fact, was a nationalist revolt that was going on in the countryside. And so there was concern that this was, destabilizing and endangering U.S. investments. As now, there's a lot of, as I also mentioned in the article, that this is really not an isolated case, that you have to look at what's happening in Haiti in a regional geopolitical context, that what's really going on here is a regional series of destabilization campaigns. This is the one that's on the radar right at the moment, but there's also a major effort going on in Venezuela.
Right. Greg,
hang on.
Just a second. We have just suddenly swept from 1915 to 2004 here in one breath, and I have a feeling some of our listeners are experiencing whiplash.
Okay, go ahead.
So we had this intervention back then. In part, it was driven by economic interests and concerns of the United States. I would assume, if you see a country that is on your doorstep and they are having, recurrent, constant political instability, that there may be some politicians and people of goodwill who actually thought that intervening, it was sort of a benevolent thing to do. I mean, or a good thing to do, or perhaps even in the interest of the United States. I mean, isn't there some argument to be made for that?
Well, I mean, if you believe that that countries can't govern themselves, then always there's an argument for going in and stabilizing, any place that that's whether it's near you or not.
Yeah, well said.
But I think that there's a serious question as to whether these people could make up their own minds. I think it's quite arrogant of the U.S. both yesterday and today to assume that that whenever they see instability, that it's our job to go in there and clean up the mess.
The fact of the matter is that
these people, these nationalists, may have worked this out, on their own. And the fact that there are a series of governments doesn't indicate that the country is in need of an invasion.
Right, but what if we help create the mess? I mean, you said that Haiti was an investment that was in trouble.
I'm not sure whether we created the mess there or not. The historical record is not clear as to whether we were in Haiti's promoting destabilization in 1915. I can't really say that.
Right. Okay, so today, now we look at the situation today, and basically the news story is Aristide, who was democratically elected, hasn't been able to hold it together. This has happened twice now to him. And so he fled, and we've gone in to try and prevent a bloodbath.
Right.
What's wrong with that story?
Right. Well, we have to go back. First of all, Aristide was originally elected in 1991. That was his first election. It was the first democratic election in Haiti after more than 20 years of a dictatorship by François Duvalier, and then after that, his son, known as Baby Doc Duvalier. There was a great domestic upheaval, and this liberation theology priest managed to win what appears to be a very fair election. He also, incidentally, won the 2000 election that brought him back to power after one term out by an overwhelming margin. I think it was more than 80% of the people voted.
Yeah, and these elections were supervised or overseen by the UN and all that sort of thing.
Yes,
we're talking
with
Greg Gouma, who is the author of a couple of books and runs towardfreedom.com about the situation in Haiti. It's 17 minutes past the hour. Greg, we got got a minute or two left.
Yeah, well, let me just to finish your point. The charge that he, you know, couldn't control the country, the fact of the matter is that the reason that the country is in such a shambles has more to do with IMF, International Monetary Fund policies. He wanted to raise the minimum wage. They wanted to suspend it. The minimum wage was $3 in 1994. Now it's $1.50. It's gone down by half, as well as cutting social spending, giving into more export agriculture.
So conservative economics.
It's an economic situation that was stimulated by outside forces, and then he's blamed for not being able to satisfy domestic demand when really this was being imposed from the outside to begin with.
Yeah. So we went in and we said, okay, we're gonna hit you with the conservative economic religion.
Right. Shock therapy, structural adjustment programs, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
This austerity system that is supposed to encourage free market capitalism, but in fact encourages sweatshops and the destruction of
right.
domestic.
Right. So in the 20 seconds we got left here, Greg, what should we do?
Well, I mean, at this point, it's a pretty bad situation. I think we should let Aristide into the United States to tell his story. CARICOM, which is the Caribbean Basin Association, is as well as congressmen in this country, are calling for an investigation of this situation. And we'd better do it now because Venezuela is next. They're already gearing up for activities there. This is going to be repeated if it's not stopped.
Great.
And the only way we can do it is to shine a light on it. And as far as I can tell, it's already fallen off the media radar screen. So I think our job is to keep it on.
We'll do it. Greg Gumma, thank you very much, Greg. TowardFreedom.com is his website. Appreciate you being with us. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Scientists in Wisconsin are helping keep pests and pesticides out of public schools. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Parents don't want insects, rodents, or mold in their children's schools, but they don't want pesticides either.
And, of course, in a confined space like that, the pesticides really have nowhere to go, and they are not subject to the natural degradation processes, such as sunlight, rainfall, and the microbes that degrade them outside.
That's John Steer, a horticulturist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says schools have an alternative to pesticides, integrated pest management, or IPM. The idea is to fight pests with tactics other than chemicals. That can mean controlling temperature and moisture, eliminating food sources, and even using a pest's natural enemies to fight it. Steer and his colleagues have developed training programs to educate schools on safer, more effective pest management.
Many of the school personnel that take care of the buildings and grounds were hired for their janitorial skills or their heating and air conditioning skills. They've never had any exposure or any experience managing pests before. And then their first day of work, they're told, by the way, you have to manage the football fields and the grounds around campus. These people have never had any training. And so that we find that when we provide them with a day of training on turf management, pest management, landscape management, they're easily able to implement IPM practices.
Steer says integrated pest management keeps poisonous chemicals away from kids and usually saves school districts money. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A series of tax breaks for wealthy Americans and a ballooning military budget has the federal government running a record deficit. What to do? If you're Alan Greenspan, try cutting Social Security benefits. 3 years ago, the chairman of the Federal Reserve told Congress that tax cuts wouldn't endanger Social Security benefits. Fast forward to last week when the Fed chief asked Congress to reduce the cost of living increases in Social Security checks. Greenspan also proposed rolling back the retirement age to 67 years old.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Layoffs usually focus on those who go unemployed, but those left behind also pay a price in their health. Analysis of the Finnish workforce by researchers at the University of Helsinki, published in the British Medical Journal, found that when a company downsized staff by 18% or more, it sparked a significant rise in the number of sick days taken by surviving employees. The main culprit? Stress from a heightened workload and the loss of workplace colleagues.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis Digilink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, I swore off love, I swore off women, devoted my life to hunting and fishing. I'd never be anybody else's lovesick fool. It ain't cool. Spend all my spare time fixing up that old rusted up pickup truck. In no time at all, I'd have it looking like brand new.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the real free speech zone. Live coast to coast. Joe Wilson has written a book now. Moving along, by the way, it's the situation in Haiti, very troublesome, and I think that Greg's point that these guys are winding up for Venezuela next is well said, and that we do need to be paying more attention to these things. It's unfortunate we're not. Joe Wilson has written a new book. It's called The Politics of Truth. It's going to be published in May. Subtitled, A Diplomat's Memoir, Inside the Lies That Led to War and Exposed My Wife's Secret CIA Identity. And here in this book, Joe Wilson says he's going to reveal the name of the person who he believes leaked his wife's identity to Robert Novak. And he also digs up some dirt on Bob Novak. So that's going to be an interesting thing to see. Anyhow, I wanted to share with you, I mentioned Teddy Roosevelt and the living wage. And to deal with this topic a little bit, Teddy Roosevelt in 1912 gave a speech that was recorded by Thomas Edison. I mean, this was early days of recording, so this is not the very best quality. But he articulated what a living wage was. Now, I just share this with you, just straight up. Here it is. I'll explain as we go along. Here's Teddy Roosevelt.
We stand for a living wage. Wages are subnormal if they fail to provide a living for those who devote their time and energy to industrial occupation.
Wages are subnormal if they fail to provide a decent living, he says. And now he goes on and he says, this is what a living wage is. And consider, this is what... I remember growing up in the 50s and 60s when one person working full time at just a regular job could pay their health insurance, put their kids through school, everything. Well, here, Teddy Roosevelt, and we'll back to that.
The monetary equivalent of a living wage varies according to local conditions.
He says, first of all, it varies locally, and then that will certainly be the case. But must include enough to secure the elements of a normal standard of living, which includes...
A standard high enough to make morality possible, to provide for education and recreation.
To provide for education and recreation, make sure and make morality possible so people don't have to steal to eat.
Care for immature members of the family.
Care for children.
To maintain the family during periods of sickness.
To maintain the family during periods of sickness.
And to permit a reasonable saving for old age.
And to permit a reasonable saving for old age. I mean, there it is. And we once had it. And we had it not as a result, as the cons will preach to you, of a free marketplace. No, I'm sorry, there's no such thing. We had it as the result of the United States government and the governments of many states as well. I mean, the minimum wage here in Vermont is higher than that for the entire nation. We had it as a result of the government coming in and saying, if you're going to run a business and you're going to employ people, you have to pay them enough that they can actually live on it. Sorry, you just have to do it. Now, this was declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court back in the 1913, right around the time that Roosevelt was making this speech. And then Roosevelt, and then the other Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, brought it back in the 30s to the screams of conservatives. They're still trying to do away with the minimum wage. And you know, to say nothing of a living wage. But this is the key, a living wage. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We will be back.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. In the ongoing criminal trial of former Tyco International CEO Dennis Kozlowski and Chief Financial Officer Mark Swartz, prosecutors have presented an enormous amount of evidence of how the two could have swindled more than $600 million from the company. But only recently has the crime been quantified in the cost of jobs. Prosecution documents from Tyco itself allege the actions of Kozlowski and Swartz cost at least 70,000 Tyco employees their livelihood.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
He's the largest fish to be hooked in the ongoing criminal probes into U.S. corporate scandals. Former WorldCom CEO Bernie Ebbers surrendered to the FBI yesterday and was indicted on fraud and conspiracy charges for leading the company into a $180 billion collapse in 2002 due to $11 billion in accounting fraud. Ebbers pleaded not guilty and left court after putting up a $10 million bond. This week, former WorldCom Chief Financial Officer Scott Sullivan copped a plea deal with federal prosecutors in exchange for his testimony against Ebbers, who faces up to 25 years in prison if convicted on all charges.
Following remarks by the Bush administration that the offshoring of U.S. jobs is good policy, lawmakers are taking aim at the president's handling of the economy. A bill proposed yesterday by Vermont Representative Bernie Sanders would end tax credits to companies that move jobs overseas. Meanwhile, a showdown is looming in the Senate over Bush administration plans to rewrite the rules on who qualifies for overtime pay. The Economic Policy Institute says changes proposed by the Labor Department could amount to a pay cut for a net 8 million Americans.
Well, since the administration refuses to change course, it's time for Congress to step in and provide some adult supervision.
Senator Tom Harkin is a Democrat from Iowa. An earlier attempt by Harkin to halt changes to overtime rules narrowly missed its mark, but Harkin says he'll try again.
It amazes me. Wherever I travel, people come up to me to talk about the overtime issue. They feel ripped off, and they want these proposed rules stopped, and that's exactly what we're going to do.
In other news, an attempt by Democrats to extend emergency benefits to the unemployed failed by two votes. The measure was attached to a bill on gun liability, but was shot down by Senate Republicans.
The first of 30 lawsuits against a company that makes flavored popcorn went to trial this week in a Joplin, Missouri courtroom. 32-year-old Eric Peoples worked for a subsidiary of International Flavors and Fragrances Incorporated, mixing up the butter flavor for microwave popcorn. 17 months later, he'd lost the use of most of his lungs and now needs a double transplant to survive. Peoples and his colleagues, who all suffer from what they now call popcorn packer's lung, blame a chemical in the flavoring for their disease. The company cites improper ventilation and claims their product is safe. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Some corporate executive perks have legendary status, like former GE chairman Jack Welch's post-retirement Manhattan apartment and Knicks tickets, or former Tyco CEO Dennis Kozlowski's Mediterranean birthday party for his wife, all on the company tab. But most executive perks go unnoticed thanks to weak rules at the Securities and Exchange Commission, which allow companies to classify such spending as general unspent from public disclosure.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
the best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. You're in the Democracy Zone. This is Tom Hartman, 27 minutes before the hour. And we're back here live defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Our program brought to you today, by the way, by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX or smalldog.com on the internet, 1-800-511-MACS, and the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE, 1-888-ECOWINE or ecowine.com on the internet. Great products to which I commend your attention. U.S. House members to offer anti-offshore jobs bill. About 50 U.S. House members plan to introduce a bill Wednesday that would deny U.S. companies federal financing and loan guarantees if they shift U.S. jobs overseas, reports Reuters in an article by David Zellinger. The proposed Defending American Jobs Act was written by Representative Bernie Sanders, who will be on our program tomorrow, independent of Vermont, and will be co-sponsored by about 50 other representatives, including Republicans Ron Paul of Texas and Virgil Good of Virginia. Yeah, people are waking up. Even Republicans, even a few Republicans are wake. They're realizing that if they don't get their act together, they're going to be out on their butts. I mean, this is. The Defending America Jobs Act would target corporate assistance offered by agencies like the U.S. Export-Import Bank, a 70-year-old unit that provides trade financing and other help to U.S. companies that conduct business abroad. See, here's the bottom line. If you want to send jobs offshore, I mean, historically, we have wanted to help companies, American companies, export things. Or, for that matter, import things. I mean, there is a level at which trade is a very good thing, and that's the level where you are acquire. And this is what Adam Smith talked about in Wealth of Nations, and it's just very, very simple, very straightforward. Trade is a good thing if it allows you to get things that you couldn't otherwise get, and you can trade in exchange for that something to somebody that they couldn't otherwise get. The examples that you know, go back to the days of Adam Smith, the examples that were commonly used in the 1700s, I think 1776 was when Wealth of Nations was published, I'm quite sure of it, were, for example, if you had one nation, like, for example, France, that produced good wine, and you had another nation, like, for example, Scotland, you know, that produced great wool and made nice sweaters, and you had another nation, as I recall, it was like Germany and sausage or something like that. But anyway, there's these three nations, and they all specialize in something. Well, you know, sitting around with wine and not having cheese from Switzerland or sausage from Germany, whichever the example was, isn't, you know, it's a bit better to have them all available. So we trade with each other. That's a rational trade policy. Now, when two countries are making the same products and their companies are competing with each other, then you get into the question of, you know, to what extent do we want to protect our domestic industries? And this is called protectionism. And everybody says, oh, Smoot-Hawley. Smoot-Hawley was this legislation that was introduced in 1932 in response to the Great Depression. And it raised tariffs. Tariffs are the taxes that are charged on products coming into the United States. And it raised tariffs. And there are a lot of folks around going, in fact, I heard a Republican yesterday, I'm pretty sure it was on Crossfire on CNN, say that Smoot-Hawley caused the Great Depression. Well, it came 3 years after the beginning of the Great Depression, first of all. And secondly, no, it didn't cause it. Some are arguing it prolonged it. There are others who argue that it didn't, that it actually helped us out, that if it weren't for Smoot-Hawley and essentially protectionist trade legislation, that the United States wouldn't have had as much of a golden era through the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and into the 80s when Ronald Reagan started dismantling all this stuff. so aggressively. The conservative agenda rolled out, and the beginning of the dismantling of the American middle class picked up steam. So anyhow, here's how it works. Back in the days when we wanted to help out our companies trade with, you know, other countries that might not be, they might not have some of the things that we have, you know, rational trade policy. We created this thing called the Ex-Im Bank, the Export-Import Bank. In fact, Max Cleland's on its board of directors, which, anyway. So, and this bank helps companies that are doing international business. Well, once corporations figured out that it was possible to export jobs as aggressively as they could, I mean, again, this largely goes back to the 1980s. Part of it had to do with changing the rules of the game of business, allowing for monopoly, reducing trade barriers. A lot of it happened in 1996 as a result of Bill Clinton pushing through NAFTA and GATT, creating the World Trade Organization, and dropping most of our trade barriers. But it goes back before that even, with his most favored nation status and all this sort of thing. So this bank is there to support companies that want to do business. And so now we've got this situation where we've got this artifact, this bank set up. Well, here, for example, Bernie Sanders singled out Motorola, back to the article by Reuters, singled out Motorola Incorporated for receiving $190 million in export-import bank assistance to build its China operation while firing 42,900 workers here in the United States. Or General Electric Company for receiving $2.5 billion to finance China expansion while firing 260,000 workers in the United States. To date, Reuters points out, lawmakers in about 20 states have proposed laws that would ban state contracts from being awarded to non-U.S. companies to permit work performed abroad. See, I think this is just, I mean, I got this press release this morning about this thing that Hillary Clinton is promoting. And, you know, that would say, okay, if you are a company and you're going to take jobs offshore, then you can't take any money from the government. I mean, they tried to do this when the Iraq War happened, a variation on this. They said if you're going to be a contractor in Iraq, you can't have moved your headquarters to Bermuda to avoid paying American taxes. But that would have excluded Halliburton. And so that bill died in Congress. I mean, the Democrats who pushed it, the Republicans killed it. And this is kind of a variation on that theme, saying, well, you know, if you're gonna export our jobs, then you don't get certain perks, you don't get certain tax benefits, tax breaks, this, that, and then the other thing. And the problem is it's trying to attack cancer with a Band-Aid. You know, I mean, it's not. What we have here is a situation where 70, 80 years of progressive reforms, starting the pressure for them starting aggressively in the 20th century. Now, you know, much of it goes back to the 1700s and the early 1800s, but then a lot of it got undone by the Civil War. You had the era of the robber barons, in which spawned the progressive and populist movement, and then you had the depression of the, you know, starting in 1929, and it became fashionable, as it were. It became acceptable to be a liberal and to say, hey, you know, government really does play a role here, and we can build a society where everybody actually can make a decent living, and we can participate in creating a middle class in America. And we did, to a large extent. Now, there were a lot of people left behind. It was hugely imperfect, but it demonstrated it's possible. It demonstrated the viability of it. And then, boom, you know, Reagan comes in and says, no, we're going to take this thing apart, and stops essentially enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act. And then Clinton comes along and says, and we're going to drop our tariffs. I mean, just so many things have been dismantled, have been taken apart, that we need really serious systemic structural change in the United States, not these little Band-Aid things, these little gentle, timid things that the Democrats are proposing. Not enough. Sorry. Of course, they're, you know, we have this unfortunate situation where they are dependent and beholden upon corporate money as well as the Republicans are. It's which gets us into another one of our systemic problems. The nation's investors, CNN's money page points out, the nation's investors give Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry a slight edge over President Bush. Say what? The nation's investors, people who make their living sitting around the pool waiting for the check to come, according to a new poll that also shows health care costs and deficit reduction are investors' most pressing concerns. See, this is not rocket science. I mean, it is for right-wing talk show hosts, obviously, but it's not rocket science to figure out that if you have a nation where, like in every other industrialized country in the world, people aren't terrified of losing their health care, or they lack access to it to begin with. I mean, consider that we have more bankruptcies right now in the United States than we have ever had in the history of this country. We have more bankruptcies in absolute numbers than we had during the Great Depression. And that half of all personal bankruptcies are caused by people being wiped out by medical bills. And, you know, it's not rocket science to look at this and say, well, wait a minute, you know, it would be good for business if we had single payer health care. And I'm afraid the Democrats are going to blow this opportunity, and they're gonna get in bed with the health insurance companies because these guys are so powerful, and they're gonna get in bed with the drug companies, and they're gonna cobble something together, and it's gonna end up just like No Child Left Behind, which was a great idea that Teddy Kennedy had, and the Republicans said, "Oh, thank you, we'll take care of this one," and turned it into, you know, basically a law that required local school districts to buy tests from politically connected testing companies. Or Medicare, you know, another great idea that the Democrats had that the Republicans said, well, we can do something with this. And we can set it up so that corporations can wipe out their retirees and still get billions of dollars from the government. Sure. I just find this fascinating. There's a Money Magazine poll of the so-called investor class feels that containing health care costs and the deficit are far more pressing economic concerns for the country than cutting taxes. Well, you know, here's a quote from Money Magazine's managing editor Bob Safian. He says, we've found that the most affluent investors, we're talking, you know, millionaires and billionaires here, the only segment, he says, where a majority says they're better off than they were a year ago, also tells us in great numbers that they are much more worried about the deficit and paying for their health care than they are about tax cuts. End quote. And then the CNN points out a resounding 44% of investors polled say containing health care costs is the nation's most pressing economic concern. Controlling the deficit is at number two, with 30% of those polled, while only 11% of the investor class says that cutting taxes should be a major consideration. Well, maybe, I mean, it may be that they're saying that because their taxes have already been cut. Or it might be that there's some people who are saying, hey, you know, we realize there's a problem. But, you know, this administration is so good at spin and intimidation. I mean, Joe Wilson referring to the outing of his wife as intimidate, you know, and I think is, here's an Operation Iraqi Freedom veteran. Here's an article from the United Press International by Mark Benjamin. GI denied health care after speaking out. I mean, this is the kind of, you stand up and speak the truth, and this is what happened. In Operation Iraqi Freedom, remember it used to be called Operation Iraqi Liberation, and then they realized that stands for OIL. Anyhow, an Operation Iraqi Freedom veteran says Army officials at Fort Knox, Kentucky, refused him medical treatment after he talked publicly about poor care at the base, which helped spark hearings in Congress. Fort Knox officials charged that soldier, Lieutenant Julian Goodrum, with being absent without leave and cut off his pay after he went to a private doctor who hospitalized him for serious mental stress as a result of his service in Iraq. This guy basically had a mental breakdown, got hospitalized, and the Army says, hey, the Goodrum 33, a veteran who served the military for more than 14 years, including the first Gulf War and Operation Iraqi Freedom, says, they are coming after me pretty bad. He says, stress from Iraq, the way he's been treated by the military since he returned, has made him so depressed he's lucky to be alive. He appeared in an October 29th UPI article. This was, what, about 6 months ago, about more than 400 soldiers on medical hold at Fort Knox who were waiting weeks and sometimes months for medical treatment. The guy's a mistake. He gave his name. That article, again, this UPI story, that article and an article of a similar situation at Fort Stewart, Georgia, sparked a series of hearings in Congress, including a January 21st appearance by Colonel Keith Armstrong, garrison commander at Fort Knox. They called this boss before this guy's boss before Congress. Not a good plan. Before a panel of the House Armed Services Committee. After appearing in the UPI article on October 29th, Goodrum asked for medical care on or about November 7th. He said he told Fort Knox officials he was having a mental breakdown, a nervous breakdown. He says, I was having problems. I told him I felt like I was having a breakdown right there, Goodrum says. Goodrum says Fort Knox told him to go away. Told him to go away because he spoke out. A soldier seeking medical care. I mean, is this the mentality, the conservative mindset, as it were? I mean, it's just absolutely scary. Hey, this is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Listen for the sound and listen for the noise. Listen for the thunder of the marching boys. A few years ago, their guns were only toys. Here comes the big parade. Don't be afraid. Price is paid. One more parade. So young, so strong, so ready for the war. So willing to go and die upon a foreign shore. All march together, everybody looks the same. So there's no one you can blame. Don't be ashamed, light the flame, one more parade.
And welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman. It's 5 minutes before the 4 minutes before the David Brooks, before the hour. David Brooks, conservative columnist in the New York Times last week, said that the problem with poverty in America was the result of, had descended from Marxist theory, and that the problem poor people have is, to quote him, not financial but behavioral. He said they lack people, the working poor in America, according to the, I mean, this is, you know, one of the big conservative spokesmen of the New York Times, lack the emotional dexterity to climb out of poverty. Do you get that? I mean, this is just absolutely incredible. Richard in Raleigh's on the line, 1-866-889-8894, our number. Hey, Richard, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom, good afternoon. Hey, I've discovered something kind of odd. I hear the same criticisms of capitalism from both the right and the left. They both suggest that it's corrupt and that the government has to be involved. There's disregard for the environment and human rights. The difference is that the right wing suggests that that's a natural occurrence of capitalism, and the left says there should be change. Now, I'm a capitalist, and I don't want to suggest any radical reforms, but I was wondering what kind of reforms would address some of those problems, or do you think that these are natural outcomes of capitalism?
Well, you're a capitalist. You mean you make your living by investing money and getting all of your income back from your investments?
Well, I'm not a capitalist with a big C.
Okay. In other words, you're somebody who thinks capitalism is a good thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I don't disagree that capitalism is a useful thing. The way to think of it is that if you think of business or capitalism, if you want to use that word, as a game. And it very much is. I mean, it's a very good metaphor. There have to be rules for the game. And when you don't, it's like, you know, if you try to play baseball and you don't have rules, what's going to happen? You're going to have chaos. If you try to play soccer, you don't have rules. And the rules have to be set up with in mind the idea of fulfilling the purpose of the rule makers, which is us. It's society. So what we do is we say, we're going to have business we're going to allow business to operate and function within the context of America in order to fulfill the goals of having a decent and civil society. And that's, you know, once that's the starting point, then everything else starts to make sense. Richard, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, discussing solutions and not false promises.
Here they got the spiritual thirst. It's here the family is broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
He loves me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Jobs lost, 2.4 million. Federal deficit, $455 billion. War in Iraq, 9,000 human lives. Friends left at the United Nations, 3. America's future, bankrupt.
The time is now.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. George W. Bush's 2004 campaign has rolled out the first political ads of the season in a multi-million dollar ad buy, trumpeting Bush's steady leadership in times of change. But the first reviews are in, and the ads are getting less than rave reviews. John Curry's campaign openly ridiculed the spots, saying the only thing steady about this president is he's steadily leading our country in the wrong direction. The general president of the International Association of Firefighters, Harold Scheidberger, lambasted the ad, saying for 2.5 years Bush has shortchanged firefighters and the safety of our homeland by not providing firefighters the resources needed to do the job. And 9/11 widow Monica Gabrielle says it's unspeakable and outrageous that George W. Bush would choose to use Ground Zero in his reelection campaign while his administration continues to resist testifying before the independent commission investigating the attacks. Hours after staking claim to the Democratic nomination for president on Super Tuesday, John Kerry began laying the groundwork for selecting a running mate for the struggle to unseat George W. Bush. Kerry told reporters during a campaign trip to Florida that he expects to announce soon the process by which he will choose the number two person for the Democratic ticket. His campaign said details might be released as early as Wednesday. Senior advisors said it was possible, but not likely, that Kerry would choose a nominee well before the Democratic nominating convention in his hometown of Boston in July. Foreign terrorism suspects held in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, do not have the right to a lawyer when appearing before a panel that will annually consider their possible release, the Pentagon said on Wednesday. Draft rules were unveiled Wednesday for review panels that will serve as parole boards for prisoners. Prisoners will have the right to state their case during a hearing, but no right to counsel. More news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C. Call toll-free 1-866-539-2509 or visit www.legion.org today. The number again, 1-866-539-2509. We'll tell your story where it matters.
According to the National Golf Foundation, the odds of an amateur golfer hitting a hole-in-one are 12,600 to 1. The odds of what 68-year-old Bill Hilsheimer accomplished could short-circuit a calculator. His most recent hole-in-one was last week at the 157-yard 13th hole at a golf course in Venice, Florida. In January, he aced a 157-yard hole at a course in Sarasota, and in September, he had another ace at a 105-yard hole on a course in Ohio. Not bad for a player who lost most of his right hand 59 years ago when he was run over by a train in Columbus, Ohio. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
If you get your car stuck in mud, the worst thing you can do is to panic and hit the accelerator, for you'll just spin your wheels and sink deeper into the mud. George Tenet learned this the hard way last month. He's the beleaguered head of our slipping and sliding CIA, which finds itself stuck in the mud of the Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld lies about weapons of mass destruction. In a panicky effort to defend his agency's capability, Tenet hit the accelerator. He insisted in a widely publicized speech that the CIA is still at the top of its game, and his proof? He cited a clear victory for U.S. spooks in Malaysia against a factory that makes metal parts that, he claimed, can be used in nuclear weapons. Tenet said that as a result of this superb U.S. intelligence, the Malaysian government shut down the factory, a blow to black market proliferators of nukes, and an unequivocal victory for the home team of George Tenet and George Bush. But, oops, Tenet had faulty information. The Malaysian factory was not closed. It's business as usual, said a factory official, as she led a group of reporters through the modern facility shortly after Tenet's wheel-spinning speech. Then, CIA PR flax hit the accelerator again. First, they claimed that Tenet's misstatement was the result of, quote, an editing error made by speechwriters, not the result of faulty intelligence. The flax explained that while the entire factory had not been shut down, the section of the plant that made the suspect parts was closed. Oops, wrong again. Malaysian officials say nothing was shut down. Moreover, instead of this factory being one of the largest in the rogue nuclear network, as Tenet claimed, it's a small firm with only 40 employees, mostly making high-precision parts for oil companies. This is Jim Hightower saying, why was Tenet so wrong on such a big speech? Because, get this, no one from the CIA bothered to visit the factory or even speak to its officials.
Oh, Randy, it was a mistake bringing you to the Texas Yodel Off.
Prilosec, Odol OTC.
Oh, boy. Well, at least we've helped lots of frequent heartburn sufferers with new Prilosec OTC, that one pill a day.
It little pill-io.
For 24 hours of zero heartburn.
One whole day.
Oh, it's possible with Prilosec OTC, and it starts working the very first day.
Hee-ho.
Now, if you could just stop that yodeling.
Prilosec, Odol OTC.
Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
At that speed, definitely hot.
I don't see it that way.
I forgot. You're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute. That's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool,
hot it really is, visit Xerox.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, folks, to the True People's Radio program. Oh, my goodness. So, David Kaye. Remember David Kaye, George Bush's guy? He was going to go find the weapons of mass destruction. Wait till you hear what he's had to say about his the latest thing out of his mouth. It's really quite extraordinary. First, however, if you'd like to call in, our number is 1-866-889-8894. And Chris in Virginia's on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
How you doing today, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you, Chris?
I'm doing pretty good. You're talking about some great stuff today.
Thank you.
You know, I was captured by your comments on the living wage and some of the things that Roosevelt so eloquently put. But to take that a step further, do you think that some of the things that have happened to that to the wage that we make could have actually caused the export of jobs in the country?
Are you suggesting that the reason that employers are going offshore is because we're paid too much?
No. I would never say we're paid too much. But what I will say is that we do have disposable income more today than we ever have in our lives. And we're going to do something.
Actually, that's not the fact, Chris. It's just not the case. You have the middle class being squeezed harder than ever in history. You've got more people in more debt right now in the United States than ever in the history of this nation.
Well, you would
that's not disposable income. People are mortgaging their homes to maintain their lifestyles. They are clawing at the ragged edges right now. The middle class is in trouble in America, Chris.
I agree. I'm one of them. I agree. But what we're seeing is a tremendous amount of spending, and you could see that in the percentage of our GDP that has been translated into consumer spending. 50 years ago, the percent of our GDP that was driven by the part of it that was consumer-driven is a fraction of what it is today. And the transition into a consumer-based economy has forced a race to the bottom in pricing.
50 years ago, who was spending if not consumers, Chris?
Well, I think we had a more of an industrial-based society. We were exporters instead of importing the amount of junk we import now.
Yeah, but that's not GDP. Actually, what was happening was that there was more government spending, relatively speaking. I mean, you had programs like WPA and things. If you go back maybe 70 years ago.
But we are seeing a race to the bottom in pricing, and I think that is really driving a lot of these jobs offshore.
I agree. There's two problems. It's like a dog chasing its tail. It's the Walmartization of America, where we're bringing in very cheap goods and selling them very cheap, and Walmart is doing predatory it's not even capitalism. I mean, predatory monopolistic behavior, wiping out their competitors and driving low prices, which, you know, hey, people want low prices. But the problem with that is that, number one, it's wiping out the small and medium-sized business infrastructure of America, which is essential. I mean, it's just the essential core of America. And secondly, it's driving all these imports of products which are made with cheap labor overseas. And so then, you know, where do the products come from? Well, the products used to come from America. I mean, Sam Walton started his whole campaign. His whole big shtick was, you know, was made in America. That was the slogan of Walmart for the first, you know, up until Sam died, basically. That was their slogan, Walmart, made in America. And now we have a situation where offshore is where the cheap labor is, and so we send the jobs over there to make the stuff, and then we bring the stuff back here, and then people have to progressively go deeper and deeper in debt in order to buy the things that they should. You know, if we were to contain our economy more closely, if we were to actually close our borders in some regards, and I say this, and people go, "Oh my God, he's talking about protectionism." Yes, yes, I am. I absolutely am. And the nations that do this have successful economies. You know, China does this, for example. You can't sell. There's a whole bunch of products you can't sell in China unless you pay, you know, unless you want to pay 30, 40, 50, 100% tariff, import duties. Japan has been protecting their economy for ever since the end of World War II and doing it very effectively. I used to do business in Japan. And there's a lot of products. You just can't get into that country because they're protecting domestic industries.
And Europe is very done a very good job at protecting their home industries as well.
They have, and you know, there are these economic cycles, and parts of Europe are really being hard hit right now. But I'd say that the biggest problem, frankly, is in Germany, and it has to do with the merging of East and West Germany rather than this economic cycle.
But wouldn't you also say that in these countries that afford the most protection of their industry, the consumers tend to pay the highest prices for equal goods?
Yes, they do, and the consumers also have the highest disposable incomes. They also have the highest salaries.
Well, and
see, that's the cycle.
They also get the most vacation time too, right? Over in Europe,
they get by law in France, you got to take 4 weeks a year.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah. So, see, the thing is that the thing that the conservative pitchmen always drop out of the equation is that there's another half to it. You know, oh, you don't want to have low prices. Well, frankly, no, I don't mind if the price of everything at Walmart went up 30% and my paycheck went up 40%. I'd have no problem with that.
Absolutely.
And if you took the cost of expertise to China and then shipping product back from China, you'd make up that 10%.
Easily, and yes, easily. You're right. I my work deals both overseas and domestically in the steel mill business, and you're right. Absolutely, I've seen firsthand the exporting of jobs and industry firsthand, and it's been devastating to this country. And bringing a little bit of it back would be it'd be a shot in the arm for sure.
I think we should bring as much of it back as we can. I mean, I think that we should go back to Adam Smith's original theory that the purpose of trade is twofold. Number one, to provide the citizens of a country with goods and services that they couldn't otherwise get. You know, we don't grow sandalwood here. You know, if you
right.
want to import sandalwood, and number two, to serve the interests of the nation. And if that's the definition, then you ask yourself, product by product, industry by industry, is it going to serve the interests of our nation? We used to have, for example, a situation where if you wanted to make a pair of shoes in Malaysia, this was before Bill Clinton and NAFTA and GATT. You want to make a actually it was before Ronald Reagan. If you wanted to make a pair of shoes in Malaysia, say a pair of sneakers has a dollar's worth of labor in them in the United States, and you wanted to make them in Malaysia where there's 10 cents worth of labor in them, you'd have to pay 90 cents to import them into the United States. The idea was to level the playing field in the game of business.
Sure.
So the cost to the seller in the United States for the labor in those shoes was a dollar, whether they were made here or whether they were made in Malaysia. If they're made in Malaysia, it was actually only 10 cents, but you got to pay 90 cents to the government. So everybody said, hey, why go to Malaysia? We should just make shoes here. And we did that from literally, Chris, we did that from 1784 when we passed our first tariff laws right up until the Reagan Revolution. Until the conservative economics started, and basically we turned sovereignty over to corporations.
Well, do you think there's any market-based solution to this? Do you think the market will straighten itself out?
The market-based solution is a fantasy phrase. It's an absolute fantasy phrase because there is no market. Markets are created by government. Governments create the currency that allows a market to exist. Governments create the laws and the court systems. I mean, if you and I want to do business with each other, we're going to sign a contract. Who's going to enforce it? You've got court systems. That's government. Who authorized your corporation and my corporation to exist? Government. Who creates the marketplace? Who stabilizes the currency? Government. The market is an artifact of government. It is created by government. So a market-based solution is a buzzword that has, in the real world, really no meaning.
So I'm giving you lots of hot topics here for you to go crazy on.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, Chris.
Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I appreciate it, too. 15 minutes after the hour, this is Tom Hartman, the Tom Hartman radio program. I want to tell you what David Kay said, then we got another call. David Kay, who was They thought, George Bush thought this was his guy. I mean, David Kay had been, the thorn in the side of Scott Ritter back when he was the weapons inspector, or the head of the weapons inspection programs during the Clinton administration. And so Bush hires, and Kay was on TV all over the place before the Iraqi war going, yes, I was a weapons inspector with Scott Ritter, and yes, I'm sure that he went, no, we didn't find anything, but I'm sure they're there, yes, indeed, really whipping us up. And I think he's having a crisis of conscience. He did an interview yesterday with The Guardian, one of the newspaper in England. And he says, this is from Information Clearinghouse, news you won't find on CNN. Summarizing The Guardian story, David Kay, the man who led the CIA's post-war effort to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, has called on the Bush administration to, quote, come clean with the American people, end quote, and admit that it was wrong about the existence of the weapons. Mr. Kay said the administration's reluctance to make that admission was delaying essential reforms of U.S. intelligence agencies and further undermining its credibility at home and abroad. The Defense Secretary, Donald Rumsfeld, has dismissed Mr. Kay's assertion that there were no weapons of mass destruction at the start of the Iraq War as a theory. As a theory, yes. And Kay I mean, he's starting to talk back now. He says it's about this is a quote from David Kaye. It's about confronting and coming clean with the American people. We should say we were mistaken, and I am determined to find out, or he should say, George Bush should say, we were mistaken, and I am determined to find out why. Yeah, right. Yeah, as if he's Mr. Kaye says that continued evasion creates public cynicism about the administration's motives, that the administration did not confront the Iraqi intelligence fiasco head on. It's going to undermine its credibility with its allies in future crises for a generation. A quote from David Kaye. Remarkable. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And let's see. Linda in Albany is on the line. Hey, Linda, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. You were speaking, of course, about capitalism and trade, and I wondered if you had read The Mystery of Capital by Hernando de Soto.
Many years ago, I read pieces of it, maybe 15 years ago.
Well, speaking of trade and capital and our problem with capital, this book studied, I think it was... real estate, illegally filed real estate around the world. It greatly exceeds the amount of money that we give in foreign aid each year.
His suggestion, as I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, because it was that there were all these black markets that were going on, and that if we simply brought them into the fold, that it would generate all this revenue and it would solve all our problems.
Yes, and yes, it's the system that we use in this country to our private property system.
Yeah.
We were in this position in the early 1800s, and we created our one unified, pretty much of a unified system, and. If we could do this for the world, their standards of living would raise.
Well, see, that's the problem, Linda, and the logic of that is the logic that led to the World Trade Organization and GATT and NAFTA, different places have to have different solutions because they have different economic bases, they have different natural resources, they have different population densities, they have different realities. It's an idealistic solution, but I don't think it'll work. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. 20 minutes past the hour. I'll be right back.
The rainforests of Africa might be in serious trouble if their gardeners go extinct. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A recent report from the UN says great apes like orangutans, chimpanzees, and mountain gorillas are in serious danger of going extinct. A lot of conservation work is being devoted to these species, and part of it draws on our sympathy for a species that's so closely related to humans. Ian Redmond says there's another important reason to protect these animals. He says great apes are the gardeners of the rainforest. Redmond is a tropical field biologist who has worked with mountain gorillas in Africa for 26 years. He says great apes are essential for maintaining the rainforest ecosystem. When they tear off leaves to eat, they also prune the trees and encourage new growth. When they break off branches to build nests, they help sunlight filter down to plants on the forest floor. And when they eat fruit, they also spread the seeds of the fruit far and wide. Redmond says those are just a few ways that great apes keep rainforest communities in good shape.
Chimps and gorillas and orangutans are effectively the gardeners of the forest, and we now are starting to value forests not just because of the resources we can get out of them, but because of their beauty and the fact that they're part of the ecology of the planet. So for all those reasons, we value forests. You don't want to shoot the gardeners if you value the forest.
Redmond says people relate more easily to great apes than other rainforest species because these animals look so much like us.
They're considered flagship species. They're the ones that people notice. If they are to survive, then their habitat and all the species that live in that habitat will benefit from the resources they bring.
Redmond says protection of the great apes is essential to ensure their own survival and the long-term protection of rainforests and the other creatures in them. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
We'll take care of her. Got my best man, Dick, looking at it now.
George Bush says he is fighting terrorism. What does he do? Cut funding for first responders. He says he is for education. What does he do? Underfund his own plan. He says he supports our veterans. What does he do? Cut funding for their health care. George Bush said he'd restore honor and integrity to the White House. It's not what you say, George. It's what you do.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission.
Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida Sierra Club.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I'd deliver. Bad news on the doorstep. I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride.
I was waiting for the punchline. It's going to take too long. Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. This is Tom Hartman. You're listening to the True People's Radio. Vice President Dick Cheney gave a rare interview to CNN, Fox, and MSNBC over the last couple of days. What was it, 2 days ago? In an effort to restore public confidence in his integrity. It is a quote, restore public confidence. And, I wonder why there isn't any public confidence in Dick Cheney's integrity. Well, He repeatedly, let's just go through his interview, if you don't mind, for a moment. I have some interesting things here. He repeatedly cited the menace of suspected terrorist Abu Musab Zaghawi, who he says is currently orchestrating terrorist attacks in Iraq, but he did not explain a new report showing that, quote, long before the war, the Bush administration had several chances to wipe out Zaghawi's terrorist operation, and perhaps kill Zarqawi himself, but never pulled the trigger, end quote. Now, this is what they're blaming the Clinton administration about with regard to Osama. Isn't that ironic? Specifically, the Pentagon drew up three separate plans to attack Zarqawi after it was revealed he was, quote, producing deadly ricin and cyanide, end quote, among other things. But in each separate instant, here's a quote, the White House killed, end quote, the proposal because, quote, the administration had set its course for war with Iraq. Let me boil this down. Here's this guy who the Bush administration knows is in bed with bin Laden, or at least, you know, a fellow traveler, is orchestrating attacks against the United States. This is before we go into Iraq. We know where he is. We know we can go and get him. And the Bush administration says, no, we're not going to deal with that. We're going to deal with Iraq first. See, Cheney was asked, it's a whitewash of the record. I mean, there's no other way to say this. This is consistent with the comments of Jeffrey Record, professor of the U.S. Army War College, who said, quote, the invasion of Iraq was diversion from the more narrow focus of defeating al-Qaeda, end quote. So here's this guy with al-Qaeda that we've sat on for a couple of years now because we were too busy going after Saddam Hussein and his weapons of mass destruction and his 10% of the world's oil supply. Cheney was asked why, if no weapons of mass destruction had been found, he said before the war that, quote, there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us, end quote. Cheney responded by saying, quote, my statements tracked with what we were getting from the intelligence community. You look at the National Intelligence Estimate on Iraq's WMD and my statements, they track almost perfectly to that period in time, end quote. But if you look at the NIE, the National Intelligence Estimate, and other intelligence Cheney was getting, his unequivocal pre-war statements, a report from the Center for American Progress, his unequivocal pre-war statements clearly distorted the intelligence picture and even took steps to hide doubts about its case from the public. As Knight Ritter reported, the public, quote, the public version of the NIE, the National Intelligence Estimate, was stripped of dissenting opinions, warnings of insufficient information, and doubts, end quote, about the White House's weapons of mass destruction case, meaning, quote, the public was given a far more definitive assessment of Iraq's plans and capabilities than President Bush and other decision makers received from their own intelligence agencies. In other words, we knew you get it. Cheney lied, and he's lying again to cover up. I mean, that's the bottom line here. It's such a tragedy, this administration. So much potential. We had the whole world with us on 9/11. We blew it. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Walmart doesn't just dominate the discount retail and grocery industries. It's muscling in on a much more lucrative market, campaign contributions. Walmart is currently the second largest overall donor in the 2004 election cycle, according to an analysis by the Center for Responsive Politics, giving 85% of its donations to Republicans and 15% to Democrats. In the 2002 federal election cycle, Walmart came in 71st among the top 100 donors.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
He's the largest fish to be hooked in the ongoing criminal probes into U.S. corporate scandals. Former WorldCom CEO Bernie Ebbers surrendered to the FBI yesterday and was indicted on fraud and conspiracy charges for leading the company into a $180 billion collapse in 2002 due to $11 billion in accounting fraud. Ebbers pleaded not guilty and left court after putting up a $10 million bond. This week, former WorldCom Chief Financial Officer Scott Sullivan copped a plea deal with federal prosecutors in exchange for his testimony against Ebbers, who faces up to 25 years in prison if convicted on all charges.
Following remarks by the Bush administration that the offshoring of U.S. jobs is good policy, lawmakers are taking aim at the president's handling of the economy. A bill proposed yesterday by Vermont Representative Bernie Sanders would end tax credits to companies that move jobs overseas. Meanwhile, a showdown is looming in the Senate over Bush administration plans to rewrite the rules on who qualifies for overtime pay. The Economic Policy Institute says changes proposed by the Labor Department could amount to a pay cut for a net 8 million Americans.
Well, since the administration refuses to change course, it's time for Congress to step in and provide some adult supervision.
Senator Tom Harkin is a Democrat from Iowa. An earlier attempt by Harkin to halt changes to overtime rules narrowly missed its mark, but Harkin says he'll try again.
It amazes me. Wherever I travel, people come up to me to talk about the overtime issue. They feel ripped off. and they want these proposed rules stopped, and that's exactly what we're going to do.
In other news, an attempt by Democrats to extend emergency benefits to the unemployed failed by two votes. The measure was attached to a bill on gun liability, but was shot down by Senate Republicans.
The first of 30 lawsuits against a company that makes flavoring for microwave popcorn went to trial this week in a Joplin, Missouri courtroom. 32-year-old Eric Peoples worked for a subsidiary of International Flavors and Fragrances Incorporated, mixing up the butter flavor for microwave popcorn. 17 months later, he'd lost the use of most of his lungs and now needs a double transplant to survive. Peoples and his colleagues, who all suffer from what they now call popcorn packer's lung, blame a chemical in the flavoring for their disease. The company cites improper ventilation and claims their product is safe. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Some corporate executive perks have legendary status, like former GE chairman Jack Welch's post-retirement Manhattan apartment and Knicks tickets, or former Tyco CEO Dennis Kozlowski's Mediterranean birthday party for his wife, all on the company tab. But most executive perks go unnoticed thanks to weak rules at the Securities and Exchange Commission, which allow companies to classify such spending as general unspecified business expenses, exempt from public disclosure.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. That, my mission is nothing less than that. And I believe yours is too, or you wouldn't be listening. We are engaged in a great crusade, my friends. Returning democracy to the United States, no small task, but a vital one for our future, for our children and their children, and the future of the world, frankly. And I don't mean that to sound maudlin. This is real. Back to those who seem to think that democracy is just a thing to be used for self-aggrandizement, and that our democratic institutions are something that should be looked down upon, and that in fact government is the problem and not the solution. The cons in office right now. Dick Cheney interviewed this weekend. By the way, if you thoughts on these things, our phone number, a new phone number this week, 1-866-889-8894. 866, one of those newfangled 800 numbers, toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. Anyhow, Cheney was asked why this, back to the Center for American Progress report, a brilliant analysis of Cheney. He was asked why, if no weapons of mass destruction had been found, he said before the war, there is no doubt that they've got them. And it's just, Knight Ritter reported that this, where did it go here? President Bush and his top aides made pre-war claims about Iraq's weapons programs that weren't always backed up by available U.S. intelligence. Now, isn't that a genteel way of saying it? President Bush and his top aides made pre-war claims that weren't always backed up by available U.S. intelligence and painted a threatening picture that was far starker than what American spies knew. Well, okay, let's move along from Iraq. Although, I'm sure there's a lot of, a bunch of our young men and women who are over there who would like to move along. Despite 8 million Americans out of work, stagnating wages, and a new ABC News Money magazine poll showing consumer confidence took its biggest plunge in more than 18 years of polling. Cheney goes on TV. Did you see this? I mean, Cheney goes on TV and he said, here's verbatim quote, "The economy is recovering significantly." And The economy is in very good shape. I mean, this is like Goebbels, you know. This is the big lie theory. While 760,000 jobless workers exhaust their unemployment benefits and hundreds of thousands simply give up their search for work because the economy is so bleak, Cheney says the national 5.6 unemployment rate is, quote, not bad, end quote. I mean, George Bush was in Michigan a couple months ago. He says Michigan's economy, which had just lost 180,000 jobs since January of 2001 when Bush took over, and has the highest unemployment rate in the nation at 7.6%, he said, looks pretty good. Absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. It goes on. It gets worse. 23 minutes before the hour, this is Tom Hartman, the Tom Hartman radio program. 1-866-889-8894, the phone number if you'd like to be on the program today. And Jim, one of our Sirius satellite listeners, is on the line. Hey, Jim, where are you?
Somewhere in Idaho, about halfway across the state.
Out of Rhode Island, you said?
In Idaho.
Oh, in Idaho. Oh, my goodness.
Good, on my way to Portland.
Uh-huh. Okay, what's up, Jim?
Well, I've done a number of things to make a difference this time. I moved and changed my address and re-registered. I moved from Kansas to Missouri and re-registered to vote, so maybe my vote will mean something this time. And what is your opinion in the area of campaign contributions that would do the most good towards removal of Bush to give the money to someplace like MoveOn.org, or to give it to the Kerry campaign directly? Do you have an opinion?
I think either one, frankly, would be a good investment. And
would you split it?
Yeah. You see, you can only donate. I mean, it depends on how much money you have. You can an individual can only donate $2,000 to a campaign. The hard money going to Kerry's campaign, the maximum that anybody could give would be $2,000. That's beyond the means of most people. That's
beyond my means. But yeah. I can come up with a few hundred, and I think that this time we're going to have to put our money where our mouth is. I personally don't believe we can stand another 4 years.
Yeah, well, they're doing their best to recreate Dickens' Victorian era, world here in the United States. When Karl Rove said that McKinley was the president that was his role model, I mean, he was right. He was telling the truth. They're doing it to us, and I agree with you. I frankly don't know, Jim. I would say either one would be a very good investment. You wouldn't go, wouldn't go wrong if you want to invest in democracy by contributing either to the Kerry campaign or MoveOn.org. I'm not sure about the DNC. Probably the DNC, too, the Democratic National Committee. I would avoid the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Committee, Council, whatever it is, the conservatives within the Democratic Party. I think that they're a part of the problem. And that's one of the messages.
I like things that I see, and I really like what I see at MoveOn.org.
Yeah, they're doing a very good job of promoting the progressive agenda, and they got it right from the very beginning. You know, I wrote a piece for CommonDreams.org about a year ago, in which I pointed out that our job, we progressives, liberals, whatever you want to call it, those of us who really believe in democracy the way that Thomas Jefferson envisioned it and the other founders of this country, that we rather than standing on the outside and throwing stones, I confess, in 2000 I voted for Ralph Nader. Rather than doing that, we need to infiltrate the Democratic Party, take it back over again, turn it back into a force for democracy, the way that the conservatives infiltrated the Republican Party. When I first wrote that article, I think it was a little more than a year ago, in Common Dreams, I got all this just blowback email, how dare you, and now I think everybody's pretty much figured out this is what we got to do. This is what we got to do.
Oh, absolutely.
This is absolutely.
I think you're 100% on the money. By the way, since I don't know how things work, but since you're not on IE anymore, I know your audio on Sirius is just much improved.
Oh, well, that's great to know. We're feeding directly to. We don't need to get into a whole technical thing, but I'm glad to hear that, Jim. I'm glad to hear that. Sirius does a great job of distributing this program, as do the radio stations around the country that carry it, and as does radiopower.org, a community-based web radio station, web-based radio station that is listener-supported. Another good place for people to
I love the show and keep
things.
Up the good work.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894, the number, if you would like to call in. When you first said about campaign contributions, it reminded me of this Wisconsin law. This gets to the kernel of the problem. This is a law that was passed in 1905. It was echoing a law that had been on the books back from the early 1800s. And a lot of these laws got pulled down in the 1880s and 1890s during the Gilded Age. And then they got put back up again in the early 1900s as the progressive and populist movement was gaining strength, which led to the direct election of the Senate up until 1917, I believe it was. I could be wrong. It might have been 1912. But right around that time, I'm pretty sure it was 1917, up until then, the Senate was actually not elected by people like you and me. The Americans didn't vote for their senators. The state governments, by whatever device they wanted to do, the Constitution just said, you know, however you decide to do it at the state level, got to pick their senators. And it was a very corrupt process in most states. It had become, you know, deal-making inside. People were buying senatorial seats. It was a very, very corrupt situation. So the progressive and populist movement that came out of the economic disaster for the middle class of the Gilded Age brought about a lot of change and a lot of transformation. The ability of women to vote in national elections and state and local governments could not prevent women from voting any longer. The direct election of the Senate. I mean, you know, some good things. And this law that I'm going to share with you in just a moment. And you know, it's interesting, just to digress for just a second, it's interesting how history gets written from the viewpoint of the kings and not the serfs. I mean, we know the history of Europe's kings. We don't know the history of the families that built Europe. And similarly, we think back to the 1880s, late 1870s through the 1880s, the 1890s, as it's referred to as the Gilded Age, as in, you know, gold-coated. And it was, you know, toward the end of that era, is the you had the Rockefellers and the Astors and the DuPonts and they came a little later, actually. But anyhow, you had these extraordinarily powerful J.P. Morgan, you know, a major financier in the 1890s. George Westinghouse, the fortunes that were made in the last part of the 19th century and the early 20th century, and we think of it as the Gilded Age, but the reality is, and I mean, just books. Reality is that during that era, there was this huge chasm between wealth and working people. I mean, by the way, 1-866-889-8894 is our number. I see a line is ringing right now. There was just this huge gap between what people could earn, what people were earning, working people, and those in the top, the middle class got wiped out during the Gilded Age, and that's what brought about these progressive and populist reforms. And I suggest we are revisiting those times. And what is going to come out of this is a return to the progressive and populist worldviews. It's going to be a good thing, I believe. I believe, you know, we are moving in the right direction. The right conversations are starting to be had. When you see people like Lou Dobbs, you know, who was gung-ho to go into Iraq and always, you know, pretty you know, up close and personal with the Republicans, taken off after them now on CNN and these sorts of things. I mean, you see that people are waking up in America. 1-866-889-8894. John in Alabama. Hey, John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
I just wanted to tell you I've been listening to you all day, and I am a real conservative type of guy, but I think it's important to, you know, listen to the other side, and I want to say that I've enjoyed listening to your show today, but I had two questions for you, and maybe you can answer them for me. If you were to try to make the economy like, say, a country that was in Europe, which one would you think would be the best, or would give us the best way of cutting down the unemployment rates?
I honestly don't know, John. I really don't know.
Okay. The other question...
I think we need to develop American solutions for America.
Right. I understand. The other question I was going to ask is, with jobs, you know, moving overseas and everything, I want to see what your view was with Hines as far as, you know, John Kerry being, you know, tied to that. And, of course,
yeah,
it's not talked about a lot, but...
Well, it will be. You can bet the Republicans are going to be talking about the fact that John Kerry's wife has a factory, you know, part of her fortune comes from factories that are overseas.
Right, yeah. which is actually, I think it's 72% of the factories are...
Yeah.
Overseas, and
although what percentage of that 72% where the factories are overseas, are they simply serving overseas markets? I mean, you can say the same thing about Coca-Cola, you know.
Sure.
They're not shipping Coke back into the United States.
Right, exactly.
Coca-Cola factories in England, and they're selling it in England. So,
right.
I frankly don't think that Theresa Heinz Kerry's businesses are in the job exporting business, but I could be wrong. I suspect that Heinz is a worldwide brand. And so you've got, you know, Heinz ketchup factories in Taiwan buying tomatoes from local Taiwanese and selling ketchup to local Taiwanese, for example, you know.
Okay.
But you know, frankly, I don't care. I mean,
right.
even if she was the world's biggest free trader and had personally exported 1 million American jobs.
Right.
If his policies are going to be the policies that are going to put America back on track, I'll vote for him.
Right. Sure.
I mean, this is the politics of personal destruction, of, you know, going after people's spouses or even their personal foibles. I'm frankly far more interested in the state of democracy in America than I am Bill Clinton's sex life or Theresa Heinz's business life.
Right. Sure. Well, I just want to tell you, I enjoyed the show and I appreciate your comments.
Thank you, John. And thanks for calling. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Is our number. And now let me share with you this law before we go to this break here. Political contributions by corporations. This is what we need to bring back, friends. This was an actual law. This was Section 4479A of the Wisconsin Penal Code. No corporation doing in this business in this state shall pay or contribute or offer to pay or contribute, consent or agree to pay or contribute directly or indirectly any money, property, free service of its officers or employees or thing of value to any political party, organization, committee, or individual for any political purpose whatsoever or for the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind or to promote or defeat the candidacy of any person for nomination, appointment, or election to any political office. The penalty? 5 years in prison. Yeah, that's campaign finance reform, my friends. This is Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be back.
Grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, look out, George. And you too, Dick. The Democrats are coming. And the liberals. And the progressives. And the Greens. They're all coming. Yes, indeed. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. The last 3 minutes of our program, we got two calls to try to take real quick here. Kim in Pennsylvania, listening on Sirius Satellite. Hey, Kim, welcome to the program.
Welcome, sir. Listen, I want to say how much I really do appreciate your show. I've called in many times, and I think it's important for all of our listeners on Sirius to make sure that Sirius knows how much we do appreciate your show. And at the same time, I'm going to put a fast plug in. Anybody that enjoyed listening to Peter Collins live, like I did, and Mark Levine, who substituted periodically on Mariana Williamson's show, we need to get up a petition to Sirius and Gorev.
Kim, I got to stop you. Kim, I'm sorry. I'm going to stop you right there because I'm not going to get into the politics of any of our affiliates. It's just nothing we're going to do. I do appreciate your kind words about the program, however. Phil in Florida, you're on the line. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I think I can answer that fellow's question in terms of a European model, and I would give Switzerland.
Switzerland.
And I'll give you a perfect example.
Okay.
Obviously, the watch industry is a very big industry in Switzerland, and they were getting beat up by the people watches in the Far East. They came out with an economy watch called a Swatch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they had a choice. They could have imported those movements from China. They could have made the whole thing in China. But they decided not to. And they are made in Switzerland by Swiss people.
Yeah, they actually have laws preventing their corporations from doing that or making, you know, they it's not so much like this is a law to prevent this corporation. You set the rules of the game. You know, you can make those things in China if you want to pay 100% tax on when you bring them into the country.
Yeah, but the thing is they could have set up a distributor in the United States.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying here is, and the other thing is with the more expensive watches, they were getting beat up and the government intervened and they all use one movement.
Yeah. Yeah,
all the manufacturers, from Cartier, you name it, they all use the same quartz movement.
That's remarkable. Phil, I got it. Thanks for the comment. Right. I got one more call here I want to try and quickly get in, and that's Jeff in Denver. Excellent point, Phil. I'm going to do a little more research on that. Hey, Jeff, we got about 30 seconds. What's up?
Yeah, just one thing to thank the caller before the previous break, who said he's conservative, just for calling in and discussing things.
Amen.
I really would love to invite other, quote, conservatives, people from all walks of persuasions, just let's talk.
Yeah,
Let's not argue. Try to prove somebody wrong.
I agree. We don't filter out people who disagree here like a lot of the con shows do. In fact, I welcome them. Jeff, thanks for the comments. Thanks for the call. Thanks for listening today. Thanks to Brad Walrod for editing our music. Thanks to Louise for producing the show. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. We'll be back. This is Tom Hartman.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If elected, I'll lie about weapons of mass destruction as a pretext to invade another country.
I'll call myself an environmentalist and gut clean air standards.
Our allies will go from respecting us to hating us, and I don't care.
I'll leave no child behind, unless they can't afford it.
I promise to keep you in a state of fear and anxiety, so you never question what we're doing.
And if you do, we'll call you unpatriotic.
Furthermore.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
My answer is bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.